What happened to your eyes?
Where am I going? We won't need eyes to see.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 125 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And 125, it sounds like it's something. It sounds like an anniversary or an important number. It's not really, is it? But it kind of sounds like it is.
Like we're a quarter of the way there to the big 200.
Yes.
But not quite.
No. I'll tell you what, we are very nearly at, though.
Oh, boy.
Skip Fest.
Skip Fest.
Do we start planning it now, knowing we've got a week?
No, we've got a week left. Do it on the night.
We probably should, though. Because by the time this episode comes out, we'll be 1 week out.
Oh my God.
I
think I'm going to be sick.
We've actually got an extra special member in the room. We've got with us in the room, Graham, a.k.a. Jaws 19.
Hiya!
Hiya!
Good afternoon.
So if you hear giggling or barfing in the corner, that's Graham. He's with us because he's going to help us plan some of this shit in a bit, isn't he?
He's going to plan this shit.
And we're just going to watch it happen. Thank God we've got a professional in the room. Yeah.
What I like then is when it does turn out to be a disaster, it's all Graham's
fault.
I knew we should have done it.
How do we get that mug involved?
Bloody hell.
Never gonna
He's flipping us the bird. Shall we talk about what's coming up on today's show?
Why not? So we're going to start the episode off with our top three party movies.
Oh.
I know, I've got the streamers, I've got some pop, I've got some candy.
Pop? Yeah. Roller cola?
Yeah, nice. Roller cola.
Roller cola.
And do we get to leave with a booty bag?
Oh, check out my sack, boys.
Oh, that's a bit weird.
That's confusing.
Yeah. The rewatch this time is Event Horizon.
Yeah.
The thing I like about this is it's a film we've never discussed in over 5 years. Mm-hmm. So this is the time. Stay tuned for that. And it's going to be very, very, very scary.
I was like, go on. Oh, scary. Yeah. Yeah, all right then.
And our main review this time round is sure to be a big player at next year's Oscars. It's the front runner, I believe. It's Hobbs and Shaw.
Yeah.
Movie masturbating this time over, Mr. Brian De Palma.
Legend.
That is a big one. When you announced it, was it you, Ben? Or
it was me.
I was literally like, who?
Yeah. No. Me too. I was really ready to hype it up, and I was just like, Brian De Palma.
It sounds like a sort of type of wine or aftershave designer. I was like,
what? Is that like with Sergio Giorgini?
Yes, exactly that.
You can still get him.
Also, now this is going to be big. This is what people are tuning in for. Lost the plot again, round two.
Yes.
And Ben, you're the games master.
I am.
Oh, thank God. Because I thought I was.
I've got some good ones, and I've not fucked yet. I've done what Mark did, actually. Yeah. I played it down the line, man. Okay. Straight bat, you know, out to mid-off. I'm trying to use cricket metaphors. Because we're playing the Ashes, but I don't know anything about cricket.
Bloody loves cricket. You know what I mean?
Plays a game a day.
We might start a cricket podcast soon. That'll be good.
Nope. Right,
yes. Wick to the end.
Wick to the
end. No. Oh, my God.
Nailed it. Nailed
it. Itself.
Well done.
Come in next week.
Wickfest.
Wickfest.
Oh, Lord. And of course, we'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll have our week's worth of pop culture recommendations. We're going to give away an incredible amount of prizes and just a lot of bullshit and banter.
Always.
Mm-hmm. Let's get started.
It's not just the Venga boys who like to party.
That's the cheeky boys.
Cheeky girls.
They like to party as well. Isn't it cheeky?
Cheeky boys.
Cheeky boys.
Cheeky boys is what you got up to on your weekend in Blackpool.
Yeah, that
stripper joint. But yeah, it's cheeky boys.
So it's not just the Venga boys and the cheeky boys who like to party. Believe it or not, Skip to the End do too. So we're going to start things off because of that reason with our top three party movies. So we're already in a bit of a jovial spirit. So Mark, I think it's only right if Ben starts this off. So Ben, what have you...
A little swerve then.
Bloody hell.
Sorry, mate.
That M. Night Shyamalan there.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
I was dead all along.
I'm going with 1978's Animal House.
Wow.
Nice.
It's the original and best college party frat boy movie. The story's simple. It's a group of misfit frat boys who party hard while constantly getting under the skin of their uptight dean. And the film is famous especially for the character of Bluto Blutarsky, played by the late, great John Belushi, who was at the height of his Saturday Night Live fame at the time. And he was a notorious wild man in real life, so casting him as the hard-drinking party monster Bluto was spot on. And it wasn't really a stretch for him. It wasn't acting, per se. They just turned a camera on and let him do his thing. I was absolutely obsessed with this film when I was a student, because it was kind of the life I wish I was living as a student. I was just drunk in a ditch most of it. But I owned the same shirt that Bluto wears in the film. It's just a black sweater with the word college written on the front. It's that simple, but nice. It's to use Mark's word, it's iconic. And I owned that, and I still own it. It doesn't fit me anymore because I'm fat now, but it used to fit me quite well. And I absolutely loved it, and I love the film. The film was written by Chris Miller, Doug Kenny and Harold Ramis, who all worked for National Lampoon magazine, and it was based on the real-life college experiences of Ramis. Now, Ramis, we will all know more famously as Egon Spengler.
Yep.
Yes.
From the Ghostbusters. Have you actually seen Animal House, you two? Because you're quite quiet at the minute, I'm guessing no.
No, I haven't, and I know the poster, because it's great, with the big white drawing of all of them at a big party, but I've never got around to seeing it.
Yeah. No, I just remember, toga, toga, toga.
Yeah, and that became a thing, people having toga parties, and that was... you know, invented for this film, essentially. The film got really shitty reviews when it came out, but it made a killing at the box office. It really spoke to the public at that time, the youth especially. And at one time, it was the highest grossing comedy movie of all time, until it was beaten by Ghostbusters.
Oh, nice.
So Ramis was having a good run there. And it's so influential. Any film now that shows fraternity hijinks, pranks, screwing over the dean, they all owe a massive debt to this film. I imagine most of the films we're going to come up with in the rest of this topic owe a huge debt to Animal House. And it's not just those college movies. It's things like Police Academy. Police Academy would not exist if this
all
film didn't
all seven
exist.
Of them.
And just imagine living in a world where Police Academy didn't exist. No, it wouldn't
imagine.
Be worth living, would
no.
it, really?
No,
it's no point.
No. No.
And that's how influential this film is. You need to go away and watch it. You really do.
It's come up loads. I saw loads of social media people say it. And again, I don't know why I've never got around to it. They recently done a HMV video cassette range where you get like, the old classics. And they only released 8 titles. And Animal House was the first one they announced.
Yeah.
So it must be something bloody good.
It is. And to be fair, it's quite tame now. By 1978 standards, it was wild and crazy. But by today's standards, it's pretty tepid, really.
Yeah.
But it's still a fantastic film. Still very funny. And you will see where all of these kind of college party movies come from. The progenitor of all of that.
Oh, I need to check it out. I'm more of a National Lampoon's Vacation kind of gal.
Hell yeah.
No, stick Chevy Chase in front of me and I'm all right. Well, obviously not now because he's a bit of a dickhead now. But I will get around to watching this. Mark?
My one, and I know Ben's going to be all over this, because he bloody loves this film.
Oh, God.
The 1993 Dazed and Confused. This film is brilliant. I don't care what anyone says. And it gives us a cast of Adam Goldberg, Joey Lauren Adams, who we know in Chase and Amy, Matthew McConaughey, that's pretty damn good, and Ben Affleck.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good platform for these actors to go on and have great careers. But I love Richard Linklater. There we go. I've been practicing
well
that all week. I'm absolutely thrilled with that. But this film is brilliant, not just because of the actual direction and all that, but it feels to me like a documentary from the 70s. The haircuts, the kind of style that they all have, the clothing, it looks legit. When he's sitting there and you see Matthew McConaughey with his weird, like, sort of curtainy haircut, and he's got this kind of, hey, watch the lever. He just looks like a sleazy 70s guy that's really kind of will not let the past go. A bit like Uncle Rico in Napoleon Dynamite. And this film from start to finish I love. I absolutely love the soundtrack. We've got Black Sabbath. That must sell it to you. If you want a good film, you've got Black Sabbath on the soundtrack.
Or I could just listen to a Black Sabbath album and not watch that film.
It starts with Aerosmith as well. Sweet
Motion. Oh, sorry.
That gets Ben involved. But it's all about the student's last day at school in the 70s, and it did feel like the 70s. I think Richard Linklater is...
He practiced it for a week.
I think Uncle Rich is a damn good fucking awesome director, and this is one of his best, and I do love it from start to finish. I know you're not a massive fan, probably because nothing really happens in it.
Yeah.
But Ben Affleck is the worst, most disgusting student in that, and he's walking around with this kind of paddle, beating the shit out of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that he's known for playing these dickhead sort of people, doesn't he? And that's what he does so well. But it'll take a lot to top this dickhead performance, because he's just the ultimate arsehole.
Yeah, he's an absolute prick, isn't
he? Yeah, the biggest bully that no one wants to see. So I think it's a great film to start fish, and I'll watch it again and again, and I think it's brilliant.
I didn't think it was a bad film per se, it just underwhelmed me a little
bit.
I'm with Mark. I really enjoy this. I think it's such a nostalgic film. The music really lifts it too. And you got the likes of Mia Jovovich in there too.
Shit, yeah, I forgot.
She's in there. And Jeremy London, who is in Mallrats, he's in it too.
Yeah, Ben, another favourite. Mallrats, dude. It's like a prequel.
But I do like it, you know, and I liked the later film, Everybody's Got Some or something like that.
I've not seen that one all the way through. I watched Boyhood, but I've not seen Everybody Wants Some.
Everybody Wants Some. And that was kind of like the modern day version of Dazed and Confused. That's quite enjoyable. And again, nothing really happens in that film. But I'm a sucker for those kind of films.
That's the way you sell me on a film. Do you want to go and see this film? Yeah, what's it about? Nothing really happens. Brilliant. Yeah. I'll pay £15 to go and see something that doesn't happen.
Come and see it in IMAX and pay extra. Honestly, dude, this is the one where nothing actually happens.
No. Don't they go to like a kegger? And they just go home. Done. Right. Brilliant. Stop off at a bowling alley.
Come on, it's your topic. You've got to try and top Dazed and Confused.
Easy. Old School.
Oh, hey, I've got it too. Yes. I've got it too.
Nice.
Directed by Todd Phillips, who, believe it or not, is the same guy that will be directing Joker in a few months.
Crazy.
I cannot wait. But we're going to talk about Old School instead. So it stars Luke Wilson, Vince Vaughn and Will Ferrell as three buddies who try and relive their college days by starting a frat near their alma mater. And when I first watched this, I must have been about 20 years old. This was out in 2003. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, a bunch of 30-year-olds trying to get in with the kids. Oh, how funny. I can't relate to it even more now. I'm just like, yep, I'm with those guys. I want to throw a kegger. I want to get Snoop Dogg around.
We're going streaking.
We're going to go quad. To the gymnasium, yeah.
That's like Skip Fest, I reckon. Somebody is going to streak.
Yes.
Yeah. So relatable, but...
Benny.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You know, of us four, it's him. Sorry, Benny, we love you, but truth's true. But what makes this film so great is the three leads in it. So you got Mitch, the unlucky and loved nice guy who's just impossible to hate. You got Beanie, the confident and upfront friend who's going to encourage you to just fucking do it. And of course, Ben... Frank the Tank.
Frank the Tank. Frank the Tank.
Tank.
You're my boy, Blue.
I love you, Dad.
Dust in the wind.
His best performance ever, I think. That's why I love him the most from start to finish. He doesn't grate on me.
This was when he was still a supporting actor. It was before he'd done things like Elf and Anchorman, before he became the lead. It was when he was kind of the secret weapon who would pop up in a film, steal every scene, and then just fuck off again.
Yeah.
And he was brilliant at that.
Yeah, and why do we love Frank the Tank so much?
Because he's hilarious.
Yeah.
My favourite line, and this won't sound funny when I put it across to you, and I'm sure it wasn't funny on paper, it's only funny because it's Will Ferrell. There's a bit where he's standing on the porch and he's in a dressing gown and he's holding this blow up doll, and the woman comes up to him and says, oh yeah, nice doll, Frank, and he goes, yeah, she's okay. And that line kills me every time. Yeah, she's okay.
Oh no, for me it's when he mistakenly shoots himself with the animal tranquilizer and his voice is really, really low. He just goes, you're crazy, but I like you, but you're crazy. And it's just, he just steals every single scene in this, doesn't he?
And I love that scene with the animal trainer played by Sean William Scott. He's so funny with that shocking mullet.
You just got hit with a fucking dart. Who's he? I've never heard of him.
Sorry, I mean Stifler.
Oh, yeah, I love that guy. Yeah.
But who wouldn't want to go to Mitchapalooza and party all night?
I know. I love when Frank is talking about his plans for the weekend. He's going to do this. And we might go to Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't know, if there's time. So the shit that comes out of his mouth. I really love the film. Luke Wilson and Vince Vaughn are terrific in it, and I think Brilliant. It's arguably their best performances as well. I love the crazy cameos, not just Sean William Scott. I like Andy Dick as the blowjob instructor. Do you remember that scene? Yeah.
Juliette Lewis as Mitch's wife at the beginning.
When she gets caught shagging that dude. It's so funny. And there was talk for quite a while of them doing a sequel to this film, and it's never happened. Apparently, Ferrell turned it down. He says, you know, I didn't just want to repeat the same thing. If only he'd applied that to Zoolander 2 and Anchorman 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Why has he got morals suddenly when he's released that shite?
Well, let's forget Sherlock Holmes. That was the end of last year.
Mm-hmm. God damn.
Yes, let's forget that.
Come on, Will.
Although Braun Strowman's in it, so, you know.
That's what I want to see when I go to cinema.
But Old School's great. There's not a lot you can say about it other than to say it's really fucking funny.
It's hilarious. The ending, when they're trying to pass all the tests that the dean throws at them... It's just ridiculous. One task to the next. Of course, Will Ferrell's beautiful rhythmic gymnastic routine.
Of course, it's fantastic. And the dean, it's Jeremy Piven, isn't it? Who's usually quite a cool guy. You think of him as being Harry from Entourage, but he's like this little peevy little guy.
Such a dick.
Yeah. It's a great... And it's got such rewatch value. It's one of those that every time I watch it, and I've seen it Christ knows how many times, it's never any less funny.
No.
It's always hilarious to me.
It seems to be a film as well that not enough people know about. When you talk about Will Ferrell's films and stuff, you go Old School. Like, no, I only know of like Elf and that. No, Old School. You must have seen it. Come on, you know, Frank the Tank. They're like, no.
How dare they?
If you're listening now, go and watch it. You'll laugh. It's impossible not to like this film.
Do you know, when I picked it, I was 100% sure that you would have it in your list, Mark.
Me too.
I had no idea that Gemma would have it, so I'm kind of delighted that Gem's got it.
Nope.
But I'm surprised that you didn't.
Not this time. It's probably tapping it like number 4 or 5. It's close.
Well, what is your next one?
This film is slowly becoming like The Jaws. I feel like I've mentioned it in the last few episodes, and not like deliberately, but The Rules of Attraction.
Great film.
Yes.
Because I absolutely really enjoyed revisiting it in our rewatch recently. It's all about those spoiled and overprivileged kids that basically are horrible. Mm. There's not one likable character in this. James Van Der Beek, which I think I mentioned only in the last episode, plays a character you would never expect after watching Dawson's Creek. But the whole story is between a drug dealer and a bisexual classmate, and the three of them have this kind of weird chemistry it's so weird as a film, isn't it? He's playing the character of Sean Bateman, and he's just absolutely disgusting from start to finish.
Oh, he's gross.
If you haven't listened to our rewatch, go back and do it, because I think it's one of our best, and it's a film that more people need to know about.
Yep.
But it's just brilliant. The soundtrack's great. The acting's good. What's the guy called that plays... Is it... what's his name? Something Summerholder or whatever.
Ian Summerholder.
That guy is a great actor. And I love his face. He's a handsome fella. But he's actually just a really good... I just love his face. He's just something about him. He always just looks like a strong actor. Yeah. He knows what he's doing.
Why don't you say again that you love his face? Yeah. You've not said it enough.
Do you know what I love about him?
God.
His face.
Wow. No.
But he's brilliant, and I want to see him in more. We don't see him a lot, do we? He was in Lost, wasn't he? He was in this.
Yeah.
He's done a bit of TV. I see him now doing Comic Cons and stuff. But I thought he was an absolute... His performance, from the start to finish, is up there with most of the best actors in the world. Mm. And I don't understand why he's not working more.
No. Graham's just showing us a picture of his lovely face.
Yeah. Don't you just love his look?
Graham's shaking his head.
It kind of looks like Rob Lowe on Plasticine.
Wait, he looks like he's having a shit in that picture.
Love my face.
But Mark, you started this by saying that there aren't any likable characters. What about Dick?
Oh,
it sucks, cock.
I'm sure we like him for the wrong reasons. But yeah, if anyone's coming to Skipfest that resembles him and wants to act like that, we want you to come to
down.
The party, as many of you as we can. The cock. Fuck you.
Fuck you.
So good. But yes, that's my choice. And I realised that I'm bringing it to a lot of topics recently. But why not? It's a great film.
And again, you know, you mentioned how not a lot of people know Old School. Even fewer people know this. And it's one of those films that everyone should know. It's genuinely brilliant and it flew under the radar.
Yeah, I think so. My next choice, it's a British film from 1999, Human Traffic.
Oh!
Mm. Now, this is an underrated film, I believe, and it focuses on 5 friends in Cardiff who spend a weekend clubbing with music, sex and drugs, and it has a very young John Sim and Danny Dyer.
Mm. Oh, that'll be good then.
Oh,
wow. Hold on, let me guess. Does he play a Cockney wide boy?
How did you... You've seen this before.
I thought you were about to say Danny DeVito. I was like, I want to see that version.
I would love to see Danny DeVito in his office tits.
Yeah.
But John Sim plays Kip, so he's the type of guy who lives for the weekend. So he's in a crappy job, it pays the money he needs, so he can just piss it up the wall on nights out and pills. And his friends are in a similar predicament. So they're in either soul-destroying careers, in shit relationships, tragic personal situations, or just spending far too much time reading jazz mags.
Bloody love a jazz mag.
I know, right?
What would be your favourite when you were growing up? Mine was
Parade.
Mine was Razzle.
Razzle.
Do you want to hear a true story?
Always. Right.
So you know that kind of myth that you could always find copies of wank mags in the woods.
Wank mags.
Right?
Yeah.
This actually happened. So near my nan's house, there used to be these woods.
Was it near my nan? Like, this story's going really fucking dark.
And I found a porn mag, and this was, we're talking early 90s, mid-90s, right? And the... My mum listens to this. Oh, God. The middle spread was of a Princess Diana lookalike.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
So I found this magazine, took it home, but then when Diana died, I had to throw it away. I just couldn't look at it anymore.
No. That makes sense.
It was too bleak.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my.
Jesus. So, if you want to bring any
wish I never said jazz wank mags now.
What, to Skipfest.
Literally just opened up a Pandora's box. Literally opened her up there.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Right, let's get back on track, guys.
Did you put it back though? Because I thought the rule in where I lived in Bayston Hill, the rule was if you took one of the wank mags that was under the shed at the Gleeblum Fields, that's where it was.
It's not a fucking library.
No, it was. If you took it and had a little jizz and then took it back, The rule was that you had to return it afterwards. Not that you get a late fine or anything like that, but the next guy would be like, did you fucking keep it? I went to have a wank and the mag wasn't there. And it was the rule that as long as you took it, had a little jizz and then took it back, it was all right.
Jesus.
My mate John Huckfield, who won't listen to this.
I love how you full named him. You could have just said John.
No, it's fine. Yeah. His dad had the best stash ever. Literally, we'd go to watch football, go back to his. In his like wardrobe,
you're listening to skip
that
to the
many,
end.
About 6 foot's worth of all the best rounds. And it wasn't softcore, it was hardcore.
I like German shit.
Yeah, you open it up and you'd open up the pages and she'd be opening up.
I'm amazed you could open the pages.
You'd see what she had for dinner. It was mad.
Oh my God.
But we didn't have to take him back to his, but now and then we'd take one out and you would never know because he's not going to go, son, did you nick one of my wank mags? Because you wouldn't, would you? Because you're not going to say that to your son. Then you've got an awkward conversation.
We've got an awkward conversation right now.
So what's your topic choice?
Well, yeah. have you finished?
That's what John's dad said.
I'm about to be. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Where do I go from here?
Screw it.
I'm just going to carry on like nothing happened.
Yeah.
So the film... Let's get on track.
What was it again? I genuinely forgot.
Human fucking traffic.
Oh, yeah. That's a great choice.
So they... Oh, yeah, God, I hate what I've just written here. They all come together as one for the weekend. Oh,
yeah.
Fucking hell.
Yes.
Genuinely can't make that up. But what I like about this film as a party movie, it doesn't try and glamorise this kind of lifestyle. So drugs are bad, okay? And it just shows the party scene what it is. So warts and all. So yeah, they find euphoric happiness with each other and all these pills and the music whilst they're off their faces. But also it highlights the paranoia, the impotency and the confusion that comes with it. So it's the old saying, what comes up must come down. But it's a really great underrated film because it was very of the time. You know, club music was huge during the late 90s, early 2000s. Not so much now because it's very manufactured. But it was very experimental with its metaphors. So there's a particular scene where Kip's complaining about his job. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to a little cutaway scene with his manager. And he basically keeps his mouth shut with the 20 quid notes and starts shafting him from behind. So it's like, you know, this is what I have to do in order to get money. Just get royally, you know.
Wow. That's the word.
Can't whistle. Thank you. Thank you, lads.
Can you not whistle?
I can.
Try again.
Oh, I can't now.
That's not terrible. A whistle.
That's bad.
It messed up when I had the braces. I've never been the same since.
Wow. Okay.
But it's, you know, it's a good film. It's very amusing to see a young Danny Dyer and Andrew Lincoln as well from The Walking Dead.
Oh.
But very, very enjoyable. Very fast-paced.
I did watch it back in the day, and it was kind of just one of those films. There's a lot of films out, like 24 Hour Party People, one, all those, and I lose track of which one's which. It was just a very British...
Yeah, they've all got John Sim in them.
There you go, and Danny Dyer. But it was pretty good. I remember the soundtrack was huge. I remember people buying it like in thousands, and yeah, it's pretty good.
In thousands?
Higher. Can I have 6,000 copies? Well, not another one. But yeah, that was the one that everyone used to love.
Yes.
And a lot of drugs were taken at that time.
There was plenty of them.
I've never seen it. I can't really comment on it, to be honest.
I know.
Because it's got Danny Dyer in.
You would hate it. Honestly,
I'm sure I would.
Absolutely despise it. What have you got then to finish us off?
Superbad.
Yeah, me too.
Yay.
Oh, nice.
Yes. It's a classic teen comedy about two high school boys looking to party, drink beer and lose their virginities before they graduate. The genius of the film is that it takes place over the course of one night, or most of the film anyway, as the boys travel from party to party and encounter all manner of crazies like drug dealers, menstruating girls and two surprisingly chill cops. It's incredible to me that Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg started writing this script when they were 13.
Amazing. Yeah.
And they went so far as to name the two lead characters after themselves. They're Evan and Seth in the film, aren't they? I think it's an absolute work of genius. And it resonates with me. I'm not going to say my life was exactly like this, but my friends and I, when we were that sort of age, all we wanted to do was get fake IDs and try and score some booze and try and hit on, you know, good-looking ladies.
Yeah.
That's what it was all about. What else was there at that
exactly.
age?
Exactly. Well, there was wank mags.
Wank mags, obviously.
But that was
yeah,
it.
But you've got to live next to a forest in order to find them.
That's true.
I'll draw you a map one day if you ever want to have a look.
Thank you.
And the film was a massive breakout for its actors, wasn't it? Like, Michael Cera was already known for Arrested Development, but Jonah Hill and Emma Stone were practically non-entities at that point. They were pretty much unknown, and both have gone on to be nominated for Oscars and win one in the case of Emma Stone. It's been huge for those actors, hasn't it, Mark?
It is, and like, this is one of the people that we have to pronounce right, so it's Jonah Hill. and it's Seth Rogen. Mm-hmm. But those two, it's Bill Hader, isn't it, and Seth Rogen. Those two are just, they should have a spin-off. If they were ever going to do anything, and not, don't give us a Superbad 2 now, it's been too long. Give us a spin-off of them two, because mm-hmm. they're the cops I want to hang out with. But the moment McLovin came on the screen, with his little fake ID, his little shirt, he's just got that little sort of virgin face.
Virgin face! Yes.
And he's got that same face now. He's in his 30s.
The thing is, what I actually do love the character, but he's kind of done like a Stifler. Even when he's in Kick-Ass, he's still McLovin. I've never seen him not be McLovin. He's not going to win any awards.
Oh,
he's not though, is he?
Christopher Mintz-Plasse, if you're listening, you can.
I just see him as that character all the time. He's great in it.
I really want him to go and win an Oscar now.
Me too. Prove you wrong.
Do you remember in like the mid-90s when Man United had that young team and Alan Hansen famously on Match of the Day said, "You don't win anything with kids." Yeah. And they went and won everything and people replayed that clip forever. I want that to be the clip that Christopher Mintz-Plasse plays at the Oscar ceremony.
He's never going to win an award with his virgin face.
Yeah, this one's from Mark from Skip the End. Up yours. Emma Stone in that film mm-hmm. is one of the... I absolutely fell in love with the moment she came on. She's got that little short skirt. She looks incredible.
Sexual. Sexualizes everything.
I was going to say, where did that come from?
Could have been talking about her talent, her charm.
It came from H&M, if you want it. I can show you the link. But she's gorgeous, and I knew at that point she'd have a big career. I didn't think she'd go on and do such serious roles, like La La Land and stuff, and then win stuff for The Favourite and stuff. That's crazy. But you just knew she was going to go on to be absolutely massive.
She's just so fucking cool and so charming. And it wasn't long after this that she went on to do Zombieland and Easy A and mm-hmm. cemented her career. But she's just, she's killer.
What do you guys think of the Zombieland 2 trailer?
I'm here for it.
I'm excited.
I can't wait. The fact they've got the original cast.
Yeah. But what about their alternatives? Thomas Middleditch, the most nervous guy in Silicon Valley. I'm here for it. Like, yes!
I wasn't sold on it. And then when I saw the trailer, I was like, now I know it's going to be good.
That slow motion shot when Woody Harrelson's spearing a zombie. He's got a great big massive grin on his face.
Mm-hmm. I liked him the other day. He was at Wimbledon drunk. Did you see that?
My
favourite clip of the entire year already. Just this tongue just going round in circles
Ben
like a washing machine.
This isn't cricket, so he's not going
to be But
Superbad, what I like about it as well, and I know it's not done by the same guy that did 40-Year-Old Virgin and all that, but it's shorter, it's snappier, it's good. After that, all the films that those guys have been involved in are too long.
Judd Apatow. Yeah.
Stop working with Judd. He's a great guy, but don't do it. It's too long. Yeah. I'm sick of it.
I think he did produce Superbad, but it's the films he directs that they just go on for an hour and a half longer than they should.
Jesus Christ. But it's got actually quite a nice end to it. It's all about the separation before they go off to their separate schools. There's actually a nice story behind it. It isn't just, you know, dick and fart jokes for an hour and a half.
Although there are some great dick jokes.
when he's
obsessed with just drawing cocks, that's fucking brilliant.
Some beautiful artworks.
We should run a competition where you have to draw a cock. Draw some nice dicks.
Win a Funko.
Yeah, we'll do that.
Draw the biggest, veiniest, squirtiest cock you can.
There we go. Dick to the end. No, when it comes to competition time, remind me, Graham, you're here, make a note of this. We're going to give something away for drawing the best dick. Fuck it, why not?
What if they draw you?
That's fine. They instantly win.
She's done you there.
I know.
She's stitched you up.
Fucking, all right. The only way to save us is, what have you got as your final choice? Like, I thought you'd have Superbad, to be honest.
I know, I nearly did, but instead I had this one instead, which is one of my favourite films of all time, Boogie Nights.
Great.
The masterpiece from Paul Thomas Anderson about Dirk Diggler and the rise and fall of his career in the porn industry. And it shows that beneath the glossy facade of the adult entertainment industry in the 70s and 80s, it turns out it's quite grubby and druggy. Not really great at all. And just like Dirk, where's the audience? We are eased into it gently.
Oh, God, she's prepped all this.
She's got like with 50 of them.
I know, God. So Come on.
We're eased into like this really cool and hip and happening party. You know, there's beautiful people, there's cocktails aplenty. And there's a bitching pool party to go on as well. And as the story goes on, we go in much, much, much deeper. Lads.
This is Phil.
This is worse than you, Mark.
I'm actually feel degraded.
And believe it or not, the veneer has disappeared and we witness the very ugly and excessive side of what indulgence does to people. And when we meet Dirk, he's full of optimism. He's this bright, wide-eyed kid that's just ready to take on the world. And by the 80s, he's just this mess, a shell of a person who doesn't really know what he's doing because the party lifestyle has completely consumed him. And I love this as a party movie because it doesn't show the wacky and fun and crazy side of it. It just shows just how dark partying can be and how it's easy to be seduced in all of the trappings that it shows. I mean, That's porn for you guys.
Just how empty it is.
Yeah, just nothing there. It is an empty shell of a jazz mag in a forest.
The only thing that's empty are my balls.
There
that's
it is.
That's too gross.
Grub. Rubby.
But what a stylish film that is.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And the soundtrack's brilliant.
Oh, the soundtrack is killer.
It reminds me of a film. I think it's a love letter to Tarantino. The way it looks, I definitely think it's got elements
of
Jackie Brown in there. Mm. The way it looks, I think it has.
I think Paul Thomas Anderson's his own man. I don't think he's trying to emulate anyone. But it's interesting you say that, because we're about to go and see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
That is
a similar kind of era. So it'll be funny to see how those two compare.
Mm-hmm. Stay tuned for the next episode.
We're going to sell that one.
Call me by surprise,
That's the film I'm looking forward to most of this year now. I know there's a few big ones like Star Wars and stuff, but that's the one. Chapter 2 as well.
Joker.
Yeah, but everything. Oh God, the trailer we saw the other day in the cinema, I was just like, Tarantino's going to kill it.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, we'll find out in the next episode, won't we?
Some good ones there. Yeah. More, probably about the same amount of crossover I thought, but I did think you'd have Superbad.
Yeah.
Ben thought I was going to have Old School.
I did,
so we liked to surprise.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We found out that what you did in your childhood, near a wooded area.
Graham, aren't you happy that you got to find all this out?
I'm going to say no.
So what have social media come up with as our great party films?
I am so glad you asked. So we're going to go to Twitter first. So Alex at Meta_content said Risky Business.
Yep.
Pretty in Pink.
Yep. Oh, nice film.
And The Girl Next Door.
Oh, that's a good film.
Superb film. Travis Degan at Chefzilla72 said Bachelor Party.
Is that the Tom Hanks one?
I don't know, because I've not
seen
it.
Not sure.
Oh, but he said it anyway. Also said Weird Science.
Yes.
Classic.
And 16 Candles.
Oh, yeah, loads of John Hughes.
Definitely. Sid Jaffa at Sid Jaffa said Spring Breakers. Brilliant. It's a very underrated film. Is that love it or hate it.
Is James Franco involved
in
that?
Yes, it is.
That's Vanessa a weird Hudgens. Film. I didn't like that.
I enjoyed it. He also said The Hangover.
Yeah.
And 21 Jump Street.
Yeah.
Oh, like yeah, that's a good fun.
That is Party Ahoy Hoy. Savage Second Union at 28 Savage Day said House Party. Kid and Play.
Oh, yeah, back in the day.
Boogie Nights and This Is the End.
That film, I know they just gave a lot of idiots a lot of money to make a stupid film.
It's a home movie.
But
frankly,
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's all right.
Lots of polarising
opinions
here. You
know they've got way too much money at that point.
Yeah.
There it is. Over to Facebook, we got Matthew Avery said Old School, Human Traffic, and Superbad.
Excellent.
Good choices.
Mm-hmm. Clive Bullock said, oh dear, Van Wilder Party Liaison.
I quite like that film.
Isn't there a bit with a hot dog or something that he's eating that's a bit juicy? I forgot what it was, but it's weird. I remember it being a bit odd.
That wasn't last Tuesday, was it? Clive also said Die Hard and National Lampoon.
No,
Die Hard.
Let's rewind. I will accept that Die Hard is a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
But it's not a party movie. I'm aware there's a Christmas party happening in Nakatomi Plaza, but it's not a party movie. Let's be real.
Yeah, otherwise we can just say Jaws. Why? Because they had a party to celebrate he was dead.
Shining. Yeah. They all had a party when they were dead.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, the third choice, I'm sure you'll agree, National Lampoon's Animal House.
Yes.
Nice.
And then finally, over to the gram, over on Instagram, Paul Butcher at Butcher's Picks said American Pie.
You've not seen it ever, have you?
Nope, never will.
Nope.
Dazed and Confused.
Nice.
And Carrie.
What? Well,
the prom,
that's a prom, it is a party, I suppose.
I'm having Napoleon Dynamite
then. It's not what I would call a party movie, though.
Fuck it.
I'm having Bridges of Madison County.
Fuck it.
She threw a hell of a potato salad party.
There we go.
Bloody love a bit of potato salad.
Can't get enough of it, eh? Nom, nom, nom. So thank you very much, guys, and as always, keep them coming in. Who's next?
Bloody hell, we're wrapping this up. I think it's Ben.
It is. I'm going to keep this shit simple, man. It's another favourite genre of mine. We're going to do our top three heist movies.
Yes!
Nice!
We've been to see Hobbs and Shaw. In this Fast and Furious spin-off, Dwayne Johnson's government agent Luke Hobbs is forced to team up with a man he once locked up, Jason Statham's villainous assassin Deckard Shaw, to take down Idris Elba's superpowered rogue MI6 operative Brixton Law. The film also features Vanessa Kirby and Helen Mirren in supporting roles. Here's your spoiler alert, we will be discussing major plot elements and, of course, the ending. Yes?
Film had a plot. Good one.
That's why my intro was really short.
Yeah.
What the fuck else can I say?
Fucking hell.
But anyway, Gemma, I'm going to throw it over to you first. Hobbs and Shaw or Hobbs and Snore?
Oh, nice. Mm.
Well, if you're asking me the question, the film's clearly influenced by nuances of the French New Wave, mm-hmm. particularly mm-hmm. the works of Agnès Varda, Jacques Rivette and Jean-Luc Godard.
Yeah, I saw that.
Who am I kidding? It was fun. It was bloody fun. And it promised action. It promised entertainment on the posters, on the trailers. And you know what? It delivered. It's not going to win the Best Picture for next year's Oscar. I know, shock horror. But it's over the top, cracking chemistry. And is it worth the ticket admission alone? Yeah, it is.
Nice. Gemma seems to like it. Mark, Hobbs and Shaw or Nobbs and Shaw?
Oh, nice. This film is utter shit. Right. But it's self-aware.
Yeah.
And I loved every moment from start to finish. Yeah. And I had an absolute blast sitting there. I switched my brain off, which didn't take much. And I just loved it. It was great.
Yeah. Well, I'm with you both.
Yes! It's
totally fucking ludicrous. But it's also quite a bit of fun. The relentless explosions and snippy banter becomes wearing after a while. By like the fourth hour of the film, I was tired. But it is a lot of fun. It's very glib. No one's taking anything seriously, which makes the film feel inconsequential. But so what? Like Gemma says, it was worth the price of admission.
Absolutely.
Let's score it.
Well, I think for me, what made it, the chemistry.
Yes, yes. Great chemistry between the leads.
Absolutely fantastic. You know, they work so well together and they go together like peanut butter and jelly. You know, Sonny and Cher, salt and pepper, the condiment and the wrappers.
Yep, nice.
That's how well they went. They're a double act that I'd happily watch in a franchise. So, movie executives, if you're listening, I know you've got a new Fast and Furious movie next year. Scrap it. Let's do another Hobbs and Shaw.
And that's clearly what they're gunning towards, because the film ends on a note where we still don't know who the bad guy that was, the person who was overseeing Idris Elba's character, we don't know who they are yet, but they're gunning for Hobbs and Shaw. So there's clearly going to be a sequel. The film's going to make a fucking mint. It's already making a lot of money after 1 week of release.
50 million I saw.
And that, I think that's just in the US. I think worldwide it's already over 200 million. So there's definitely going to be a sequel.
You know when you buy a ticket to this film what to expect. If you're going in there expecting like an unofficial sequel to Schindler's List, you're not going to get it. You're not. It's not like Schindler's List in any way. It is literally the most beer and pizza entertainment film you could ask for.
Yeah.
I sat there and smiled for 2 hours, dude. And that was a long film.
Me too.
But I laughed at the jokes. I liked the cameos. I liked the fucking stupidness of The Rock being The Rock. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that they've got wrestlers in the film doing wrestling moves.
Yes!
I buy a ticket, I want Roman Reigns to actually. How when we came out of the cinema, did the impression better than me? But he does this.
That was his only line.
That's it. And I want that in the film. I actually do want to see that. I want to see him suplex someone.
Well, yeah, The Rock Rock did a German suplex on Idris Elba on a rock, which was tremendous.
What is meta?
Gemma nailed it. Yeah,
my Lord.
Yeah. We saw Roman Reigns do a spear and a Samoan drop.
Yes.
Didn't get any lines, but he got to do his moves.
And that's what I want. That's exactly what I want from the film.
Take my money.
I thought to consider this guy has directed Atomic Blonde, John Wick.
Mm-hmm.
You knew what
mm-hmm.
you were going to get, and he's took it up a level. I actually think the CGI, as sometimes when it looks so stupid, it works. When you're seeing this car chase against a helicopter, a helicopter's in the sky and there's a trail of 5 or 6 cars that are linked up that are trailing behind this helicopter.
Not only that, first go as well. I was like, come on!
If you've got a car, you need to know how to hook it onto another one first time. Otherwise, you could have an accident.
And also, when they disconnected from the cars, it didn't matter because The Rock is as strong as a helicopter that's flying in the air. He was able to hold onto it and pull it back because he's that strong. And
weird?
I believe that. I believe that's so true.
Isn't it weird that I was like, I'm sold with that.
Yeah.
I would rip his arm off. He would be dead.
Yeah.
But in this film, I'm cool with him holding the whole of a helicopter on a chain. But he did look like he was straining a bit because he obviously doesn't usually bench a whole helicopter.
No.
Yeah.
Probably just half.
You mentioned the CGI there. I thought the CGI was mostly good. There was a couple of bits that stood out to me as being atrocious, though. There's a bit where Idris Elba's character, Brixton, which is the Londoniest name that a London character can have.
What's his surname again?
Law.
Brixton Law. Oh, that's my wrestler name.
It might as well have been Brixton Clapham. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But there's a bit where they're chasing through the streets in London and there's a van pulls out in front of him and he slides underneath the van on his motorbike and that looked like some rubbery shit. It looked like, you remember the old Spider-Man films when he used to swing through the air and didn't look like a human?
Yeah.
It looked like that. It was really bad.
It was like they saw that bit in The Dark Knight, you know, when the motorcycle kind of folds in on itself and goes back. It was like that, but why don't we do that 10 more times, guys, in the film?
With worse CGI.
Yeah.
That was wank.
Attica.
I think the CGI as well, when the skyscraper scene when they're actually running down the side of the building.
Yeah. Believable. I loved it.
This was right near the start. But you're actually seeing The Rock sprinting down a building. That's what you would have. That's what would happen.
It,
you
know? That is legitimate, real life situation right there.
And the shame of it is that's one of the most fun scenes, especially when you've got The Rock smashing that guy into the elevator that the stadium's in. But they spoiled it. It was in the trailer.
Yeah.
Don't show us that in the trailer because it's such a cool, funny scene.
Even the ending with the cars and the helicopter. I would have loved that to be the big finale where you know you're juiced up and you just want something massive happening. And then it was like no.
Jesus Christ.
Stop right now. But I can honestly say during the whole film, you know, kind of what echoing what Mark said, I had a big great grin on my face. Yeah. I hurted my face because it was just so
hurted.
Much fun. Hurted.
That's great grammar. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Thanks.
I hurted my face.
I hurted my face right now. But you don't mind it so much. And Jason Statham, I mentioned him on the last episode. I think he needs to get a bit of credit on this.
Yeah.
I love how serious you think he's going to be acting the whole character, but in actual fact he's just having so much fun with it. It's the deadpan of his delivery that he manages to hone very, very well.
He for me was the MVP of the
film. I agree completely.
I thought Johnson, to be fair, was just walking through it, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't putting any effort in. He was just coasting on his charm like he always does, and his charm is immeasurable, so he can get away with it. But Statham was putting his best in, and I thought Statham was fucking hilarious. And because he's a legit fighter, you know, he used to be a martial artist, his fight scenes always look incredible.
They do.
Yeah. And he had some great chemistry with Vanessa Kirby as his sister Hattie.
Big time,
And she was great too. I think she was really underrated. Obviously, when you've got personalities such as Statham and Johnson, you really need to fight your own to try and be noticed. But I think she really held her own, and she was a great presence in addition to the film.
And I was dubious about her playing a badass because I know her from The Crown.
Yes.
Where she plays Princess Anne or Margaret, one of them. And so I wasn't expecting her to be, I didn't think I'd be able to believe her as a badass. But she's so fucking cool. And again, it seems like she was doing a lot of her own fight scenes. Unless they were CGI-ing her face onto someone else's head, she was doing a lot of those scenes herself, and she was killer.
And, I mean, that goes to say, the fight between herself and Dwayne Johnson towards the beginning, when he catches her escaping the Savoy Hotel. I love that. That wasn't even fight. It was like dance choreography. It was really sort of elements of ballet, and I loved how all of it kind of interconnected together. I thought it was beautiful to watch.
I can't believe we're saying this about this film.
I know.
Talking about the choreography and
the
directing.
Sharp.
But it was.
Sharp.
And they're realistic fights. Unlike Christopher Nolan, I felt the punches, I felt the kicks, and they didn't go on too long. It wasn't like they live where you're like, oh my God. The fights between the two of them are great. And even when they're just sitting on the plane and they're having banter with each other, you can see the frustrations. I actually genuinely found them funny. It didn't go on too long. And their actual wit and their jokes at each other about slagging each other off and trying to one-up each other. I was actually laughing out loud in the cinema. Yeah. And I don't laugh a lot in film.
I love the bit when Kevin Hart turned up.
Yes!
And I didn't know he was in it.
No, I didn't.
And he was good.
The cameos from Kevin Hart, Rob Delaney and Ryan Reynolds. No one really knew about them until they turned up. And I thought all three cameos were great. But especially Kevin Hart. I thought his scene on the plane was hilarious.
He was hilarious. I loved him. The one thing I don't like about the film, and it's controversial because people love him and say he's one of the best actors in the world, but I can't get on board with Idris Elba. I don't know what it is. I always see him as Luther, so I watched all of the series and I always see him as that amazing character and great.
Yeah.
And I've heard about him doing James Bond and all this, but as a villain, I was never sold. I never thought he was that much of a threat. I never thought he was actually going to be able to defeat these massive, juiced up men. And I just sat there thinking, he looks more like he's in a Marvel film. I felt like he was just kind of doing that whole, I've got this big helmet and I'm going on my bike, a bit like sort of like Ghost Rider sort of figure.
I kind of have to agree with Mark. I felt he got a bit shortchanged in the film. I love him. I think he's a great actor. I love whatever he does. But I feel like I wish they kind of gave him just that little bit more edge. And I know that's such a big ask. So when you're going to be doing a villain, you need to be evil. You need to be raging. But I think they probably concentrate more on him being, you know, rah, I'm a villain, I'm a bad guy. But I didn't really, I found it very hard to connect with.
I'm more inclined to agree with Gemma rather than Mark. I thought he was great, but I don't think he was given enough to do. And I don't recall ever seeing him play a villain before.
No,
thought he was really cool. I really dug him.
No, I don't know. Perhaps I just never thought that this guy's actually going to be a genuine threat. Even when he turned up to their hometown, they had all these Samoans and everything. I still thought he just looked like this weak guy in just leathers. I was just like, I want him to have some big weapon or something to show he's this. I've watched too many superhero films. I think that's the problem. So I expect him to have like a flamethrower or something. jump in.
Well, one of them did at one point.
But yeah. I never believed he was going to defeat them. Okay. And that, for me, I just think he's the weak link.
Do you know what? That brings me to a point, something I read a couple of days ago. Apparently, all the people who are involved in these Fast and Furious films, The Rock, Jason Statham, Vin Diesel and whatnot, they have things in their contracts whereby, you read about this where they're not allowed to lose fights. So they have people on set that count how many punches each one takes, how many times they fall down, blah, 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 blah. So no one looks weaker than anyone else in the cast.
Yep.
What fragile fucking egos these dudes have.
Toxic in masculinity.
The genuine contract has this in.
Yeah.
And because obviously The Rock's the producer, he can't lose. He can't look like he's having his ass kicked.
Mm-hmm. Oh my
Just gosh. Leave it at the door, do the film, take your big paycheck and not worry. Who's going to sit there going, oh, he looks a bit weak?
It's so lame.
I'm sorry, that is the funniest thing I've heard all day. And I've heard you talking about what happened in your childhood today. So that does. That
what happens at Gleeblands stays at the Gleeblands Field, all right?
Everyone knows that.
That was the rule.
What's the first rule?
What? Wash your hands.
There's one bit in the film that completely took me out of it. The only time in the film where I wasn't fully absorbed, it was when they were having the chase scene through London, which I thought was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I loved the sort of bird's eye view on it. I thought it was beautifully filmed. But there's a bit where they're zooming past one street and they go past Greg's. And I just don't expect to see a Greg's.
Hobbs and Shaw and Greg's.
In a Hollywood blockbuster.
I just love those vegan sausage rolls.
That took you out. So the fact that he's running down a skyscraper
was fine. I believe
he could hold an actual helicopter.
Yeah.
Normal Tuesday night.
But the fact he could have gone and get a meal deal for $3.20 with any drink of his choice and a sausage roll.
Not having it.
That was too much.
The Rock has never walked within 50 miles of a Greg's.
He's not the type of guy that orders a cinnamon bun.
Gemma. Shouldn't have to.
He's more concerned about how many hits he gets.
I love that. That's what took me out of it. But then I bet on the way home you went and got a Greg's.
Yeah, I did. Got yourself a steak, Blake.
Advertising works.
Sausage, bean and cheese melt from there for a quid. They're a winner. Yes.
Have you heard that they're starting to do late night Greg's? They're going to have Greg's open until like midnight.
Are you kidding me?
I'm all about it.
This is genuine. You can get Greg's drive-thrus now.
Fuck
me. In the UK,
the
not even America.
The future is now.
Can you imagine that? What do you want? The thing is, I don't want the pressure. You know, at McDonald's, you normally know it's a meal. I'll have a Big Mac and chips. Yeah. When you're there, fucking hell, I don't know what I want. I'll have a yum-yum. I'll have a donut. I'll have a steak bake.
First place you went to was a yum yum. Fucking yum yum.
After those three, I'm then thinking, does anyone else want anything?
You cleared the whole stock.
The worst part is with a Greggs, I always get a sausage roll for the walk back to the car with my Greggs. I don't mind admitting it.
Jesus.
Oh, a baguette and a drink's £3, and you get a sausage roll or a pizza slice to eat for the walk to the car. And you think, how far's the walk? I'm talking, it's literally 100 yards.
You know how McDonald's has like a free toy if you go for a Happy Meal? Yeah. For Grace, you get free cholesterol.
Yeah, free heart attack.
Brilliant. Sign me up.
I don't even care that I'm admitting it. It's fun, and there's a lot of crumbs in my car from when I've just finished the sausage roll to then drive home. I love it.
We've got off topic, haven't we?
Really have.
Let's score it. Jesus Christ.
Perfect.
Gemma, what are you giving it?
Oh, so much fun. Go and watch it. You won't regret it. 8 out of 10.
Ooh, Mark.
Oh my God. Fuck it, 8 out of 10. I had a great laugh. My brain was switched off and I didn't have to think. And most of the films we've been reviewing recently, oh God, I better take some notes. Fuck it, I had fun. 8's a good score.
It's great fun, and I'm not giving it an 8, you lunatics. I'm giving it a solid 7. But nonetheless, overall, that gives it a skip to the end, 8 out of 10.
It's competition time!
That was great.
Thank you. Well done. I kept the pitch as well. Mm-hmm. None of that. So, score?
A.
Wow!
Easy A.
That is it. I don't think I can top that. A+, maybe.
You can.
Yeah. Or A++, mate.
Yeah.
Think about that.
A+, infinity.
Got something to work towards.
I will always continue until I hit that grade, and then we will call it a day. There we go. So... on the last episode, for some reason, we had some Ghostbuster Funko Pops because we couldn't find anything to go with the main release. We struggled a little bit. And the question we put out there, which was a bit more than just, you know, you have to use Google or IMDb, was what year was the original Ghostbusters release? So, Gemma.
1984!
Gareth Lewis on Facebook will be getting that full set. And they look wicked. Yeah. They're all the original characters. You get a Slimer Funko.
Did he get the answer right?
He did.
Oh, yes. Yay! Correct. All right, Gareth!
We also had some alien Funko Pops, but that did go well with our actual movie masturbate over Ridley. So that was a bit of relevance. The question we put out there to win these amazing alien pops was, who plays Ripley in the film Alien? So, Ben?
Sigourney Weaver.
It's true, and Michelle Potts on email will be getting those in the post. The Funkos that I wish I could win, and they are brilliant, are the full set of Jaws. You get all the main characters, and then you get the Jaws with an actual barrel in the mouth, and then you get another one without. It's great. You got Quinn, you got them all, you got Brody. It looks so, so good. What island does the actual film take place on?
Amity Island.
It's absolutely true, and Emma Rothman will be getting those in the post. And again, post the pictures I want to see. Let me know your address, and let me know when you're out of the house.
Are you just going to send her the box?
Yeah, I want to win.
Like a drawing of the shark or a drawing of Quinn's.
I so want them. The Last Exit guys came along, and they gave us an awesome alien cap. Again, this is a real smart cap. So, to win this, we put the question out there, real simple. John Hurt plays which character in Alien?
Kane.
It's true. And is that the wrestler Kane?
No, it's a different character,
if
sadly.
If I wanted to see films with Kane in, what would you suggest?
What's that one where he's having a wank?
See No Evil, Jizz No Evil. That's an amazing film. And also we had, this is really nice, a Blade Runner tee like Ben's got on tonight. Look at that.
Yeah, man.
And what did you discover the other day?
Oh, this Blade Runner 2049 shirt, I had no idea that it's glow-in-the-dark.
Ah!
So I was a little bit pissed, and I walked into my toilet and didn't turn the light on, and my chest was glowing bright green. I was like, what the fuck?
How cool is that? That is really, really cool.
It's pretty good.
Roy Batty is played by who in the film Blade Runner?
It's Rutger Hauer.
I know.
There goes my hero.
That is sad, isn't
Watch
it?
Watch him as he goes. R.I.P. Rutger.
I know.
Absolutely.
Horrendous. But Todd28289... we'll be getting that in his memory, which is sad. Can't believe that's happened since we did this competition.
Right?
Perhaps we shouldn't do competitions about people that we like. So, you know what I mean? Win some James Corden merch. Yeah, please. Let's actually give away some nice new prizes. Last Exit have come and get, this works. Last Exit have come on and given us an Event Horizon t-shirt.
No.
Which has Lewis
really?
And Clark on it. Yep.
I didn't even know they did
no.
that.
No.
That's your next pick. Mm-hmm. Let's say, real simple, who directed the film Event Horizon? That's really cool. They've also given us a brand new The Thing t-shirt, which we always go, we love these things. Look at the design.
Oh, la la la.
Let's say, who played... No, actually, no. Draw us a dick. That's the one. Yeah.
The vainier the better.
Draw us a dick via Instagram, email us. Don't send us dick pics of yourself.
No.
Please
they
don't.
Will
no.
not... Send them to Jaws 19.
We don't want tracings of your own dick or anything.
Fucking
we want.
Taking pictures of his own knob.
Here's a question for you. Right. When you used to draw dicks as a kid, and you definitely did, you all definitely did. You know when you had little spurts coming out of it?
Yeah.
Was that piss or jizz?
Piss, because I was quite innocent.
Gemma?
Yeah, it was piss.
I'm with you. I've asked a lot of people this question. I don't know why, but people always say jizz. I was like, I was too young to know what jizz was. It was always piss to me.
I wouldn't even be rubbing mine to get jizz at that age. I wouldn't. I wouldn't know what jizz was. It'd just be like white wee.
I don't know.
No, but honestly, when I was drawing them, and we talk about
American
Vandal.
We didn't ask for this.
It's all about drawing the main shaft and then two balls. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about the hair.
Why are you concentrating
on the bell end. You've got to put that line in to define the bell end from the shaft.
Absolutely.
Do you draw then a little line to do the tip?
Of course.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Am I a mug? Of course, I do.
We're helping people out there. Make sure that if you do submit a picture, we want a good bell end.
Oh, can you do some surrealist art for it too?
Yeah, there we go.
Like Mondrian or like...
Yes.
René Magritte.
I want a Salvador Dali dick.
Tell you what, Dali dicks. Hashtag Dali dicks.
The craziest thing is, when we actually ran a competition last time, it then meant that we had an actual... Graham sitting here drawing a penis. Is that jizz or piss?
That's jizz.
Okay, cool. Yeah. It became our new logo.
It did.
Which was from a competition. So who knows? We might have a dick as our logo in a couple of weeks.
Dick to the end.
That's what I like. Do we need a hashtag? Skip dick? Is that all right?
Yeah. Skip dick.
And then we'll announce the winner on the next episode. And we'll throw in some Funkos as well. And who knows? We'll just chuck in loads. I want loads of people to get. I just want some dicks
for
everywhere.
For a second, I thought you'd say, chuck in some jizz if you feel like it.
No,
please don't.
No, we
won't accept jizz.
No, that's not good. Richer Sounds have given us a JBL Tune 500 BT set of Bluetooth headphones. So they're a bit more compact. If you're on the train or the bus, you want to listen to our podcast, they're the right choice. Let's say, what's your favourite ever musical score to listen to? I don't want soundtracks, score.
Oh my lord,
what's your favourite score?
Probably say Hans Zimmer in Inception. It's beautiful.
Ben?
I'm going to go with Gemma's because I can't think of another one.
I'm going to go with Gemma's as well. I can't think of this one. But anything by Hans Zimmer is sound good. Graham, what's yours? Favourite score?
Probably Requiem for a Dream.
Oh,
yes, definitely.
Good shout.
Great He's good,
shout.
I like that.
Clint Mansell, right? Clint Mansell. Yeah.
Now this is when we need to rig this competition. Because I said to Sully, there's nothing you're going to be able to give us for Hobbs and Shaw. There's nothing you're going to be able to do. So he said, why don't I sort you out two full sets of the Office Funko Pops.
Hell yes.
Oh my lord.
So let's not run a competition.
Okay.
We'll win them. And that's it. Let's just say, what's everyone's favourite character from The Office?
Yeah.
Oh,
I like that.
Oh shit, that's tough though, isn't it?
Man, too hard.
Because I like Gabe.
I like Gabe.
Gabe is the king.
Yeah, Andy Bernard,
Dwight, Kevin,
Dwight. Dwight.
Oh, Dwight.
Mose.
Oh, cousin Mose. Who's yours, Graham?
My favourite character in The Office? Oh my god. Thanks for putting me on the spot. I love Daryl.
Oh, Daryl, yeah. I'm a big fan of Daryl.
Can I give a shout out to Prison Mike?
Oh,
Prison Mike.
Don't drop the soap.
They've got a Funko for that coming out.
I know, I've seen it.
Oh my god.
And I never got caught neither.
Date Mike.
I think it's Dwight. I think if I had to, it's got to be Dwight. Yeah. So don't bother entering that because we're going to have them. But if you do, let us know your favourite character. And we'll also give a set away for a 5-star iTunes rating.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to enter these competitions is go on skiptheend.co.uk because on there's our Twitter, our Facebook and our Instagram and our email. And what we'll do, we'll come back in 2 weeks' time and announce all the winners of these incredible prizes.
It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a director out of the pot and we talk about our favourite film from that particular person. On the last episode, we picked out Sir Brian De Palma. Really trying to jazz him up. I feel like he's done some pretty good stuff after researching on the last episode because I didn't know at the time. But that is in the past, so we have our choices ready and able. And Mark, I want to fire this over to you. 3, 2, 1, go.
Carrie.
Me too.
Good work. When you do a Stephen King adaptation right, and you get it, you know, you get all the kind of the acting, the budget, and the special effects right, I think there's nothing better. You've got the best source material you can work from. So many times they get it wrong, but this guy absolutely nailed this, and I think from start to finish, it's a horror masterpiece. I really do. You've seen it right, Ben?
I believe so. I can't remember for sure. But it's one of those films that's so like pervasive in culture.
Yeah.
And I've seen, obviously, the blood falling on her at the prom and all that. So I kind of feel like I've seen it, but I might not have.
Yeah.
For me, it's literally up there with like the main sort of Shinings and stuff, with like horror classics that I think everyone needs to see. What I like about this, and Gemma, I'll pass it to you quite soon because this is something I know means a lot to you. You're very much into this film. The fact that it got the recognition it deserved. The fact that the main actress, how do you pronounce her surname?
Sissy Spacek.
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 Spacek. Oh. Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
We were all wrong.
She was Oscar nominated.
Yeah.
And that's bloody good because you do not get many people now that actually get nominated for Oscars that are in horrors. That's quite rare.
True.
And I think the fact that he doesn't just introduce us to Carrie's powers straight away, we get the whole focus of the torment that she has at school every day, the bullying, and we see why then when she does explode and goes absolutely fucking mental, it's justified and you're cheering her on. It could start with that whole scene and you'd be blown away. It'd be the best opening into a film ever. You'd be like, oh my God. But the fact that we get this long payoff and we see it all building up to the prom night and how she's been so, so badly treated. And we've all been at school. Kids can be absolute wankers.
Yeah.
Bullies can be the worst ever. So to see how she reacts and kind of gets her moment is all worth it. But come on, Gem, I'm not going to steal all your thunder. Why do you love this film?
I think Spacek is a master class of acting in this film. You know, she plays Carrie with such softness and vulnerability. So from what happens at the end, you can't quite believe this is the same person that's responsible for the massacre at the prom. And her mother, played ferociously by Piper Laurie, who is also Oscar nominated, she's demonic, you know, for a woman who says that God is her life and, you know, almost sort of shouts the teachings of God to Carrie. She's just a demon. She's just scornful and hateful and ends up in a way almost becoming Carrie's abuser too. And it's just such a heartbreaking film, but it's also terrifying. And I think De Palma plays with the way how the whole film is shot. For me personally. So, for example, at the beginning, when we see the girls taunting Carrie for discovering she's just started a period, De Palma films the girls as close-ups, so you see each of their faces just spitting like nastiness and vitriol at Carrie. But of course, I'd be silly not to mention the prom scene. And I think the way how it's all shot is just something of cinematic beauty. She sees everyone laughing at her and has the words of her mother, her teacher, and the classmates all echoing around her head. Then suddenly the screen starts splitting and the whole lighting turns red. And red, of course, is danger. Mm-hmm. Red means that something bad is about to happen. And we see Carrie controlling the whole of the room by trapping everyone in the hall. And all the while, she just stays transfixed with this wide-eyed and emotionless expression. And her rage dictates everything that you would need to know, all contained in her eyes. It is just terrifying. But at the same time, what Mark said, you kind of feel it's justified. You're like, she deserves this moment. She deserves to have her revenge. But it still makes it incredibly uncomfortable to watch.
I can't word it any better.
Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
You've done very, very well. But it's amazing, man. I love it all. I've watched it again recently because Arrow released like a special edition where you get all the interviews, and now they get some of the cast to talk about what it was like back then. Remember, these films back then in 1976, like Jaws and stuff, it was scaring people in cinemas. It wasn't new. Every week we get a film like Carrie now about a prom where the girls are getting picked on and there's a lot of blood and they get their revenge. This was one of the first.
Here's a question that you may or may not know the answer to, but what did King think of this? Because King is notorious for not liking the films that are actually good and liking the ones that are shit.
I think he liked this one, because he doesn't like The Shining, does he? I don't think. And he hates The Green Mile and all this. And Shawshank he didn't like, but he'll like fucking some straight-to-TV.
Yeah, I think he liked Under the Dome.
That's the worst.
Yeah, that's absolutely shite. But I think he liked this one, which is good to hear. And there is a remake.
Was it Hit Girl that plays the...
It was, yeah. Yeah.
The Rage Chloe Carrie Moretz. Too.
Yeah, and it didn't work for me. She did well. Yeah. She did well.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I was talking about, there was a sequel in the late 90s called The Rage Carrie 2, but there was a remake as well.
So I'd not seen the sequel. Nope. I don't know, it might be a masterpiece, but the actual remake.
I doubt it.
Remake for me wasn't great, but it wasn't as bad as what we've been treated to recently with some shite that we get. Stuff like Let the Right One In remake.
Which is also Chloe Moretz, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Chloe Moretz, Let Me In.
Yes, Let Me In. Do you know what I mean? Don't just at least give it the same title.
Yeah.
But anyway.
They changed a few things here and there.
The only person who gets me when they say Let Me In is Bray Wyatt.
Yes, exactly that.
Let Me In.
So good. I can't wait to see him fight at SummerSlam eventually.
Yeah.
What do you think about him? Do you like his new character?
Any thoughts on the fiend, Gemma?
Oh yeah, he's fiendish. If he was a cake, he'd be a fiendish fancy.
Brilliant. That's fucking trash.
That is awful.
I don't even know what she's doing.
Can you save her and give us your choice, please, dude?
My choice. They pull a knife, you pull a gun. They put one of yours in the hospital, you put one of theirs in the morgue. That's the Chicago way. It's the Untouchables, baby.
Nice.
It's a magnificent, brutal, stylish thriller with all the hallmarks of what makes De Palma great. Brian De Palma, he's a master of atmosphere. And especially in the noirish vein, he does a lot of films that have that kind of noir look. That's why he gravitates to a lot of sort of crime films, I think. And he's never shy about depicting violence on screen. He has that Scorsese thing where he's an absolute master of his craft and could be making highbrow arty shit, but he prefers to apply his talents to more lowbrow fare, like crime films and horror films as well, like Carrie. He's fantastic at what he does, but, you know, we talked about how you guys didn't really know him. His name didn't pop out to you at the start. And I think that's because he's never tried to hit it big. He's always been kind of middle, you know, in the middle of the pack sort of thing. He's never quite got there to the Scorsese level, but he has that same level of talent to me. One of the great things about this film is the cast that he was able to corral. Kevin Costner as the clean-cut cop Elliot Ness, fantastic. Sean Connery as the world-weary Jim Malone. Sean Connery, supposedly an Irish-American, still with the same Scottish accent. Still with the same Scottish accent. Yeah. Like he was when he played a lovable Spanish rogue in Highlander. He was still Scottish. And then, of course, you had Robert De Niro playing legendary gangster Al Capone.
What a cast.
And you guys have seen Untouchables, haven't you? Sure.
Yes. I'm surprised we haven't done it as a rewatch, because it's a film that we should have done, because it's absolutely amazing from start to finish. I've only seen it once, but I remember being blown away, and I think Kevin Costner, considering he's up against De Niro and all these, absolutely blows everyone else out of the water. I think
Holds
he's fucking unbelievable.
He is incredible. And it could have been a very different film, because at one time, Mickey Rourke was in talks to play Elliot Ness rather than Costner, and Bob Hoskins was up for Al Capone.
Oh, my! I would watch that film, but of course I can't.
Is he dead?
Yes.
I was going to say it's not a lot recently.
Passed away for a while.
I was going to say, but he was good. I like him.
He was amazing.
Roger Rabbit.
Incredible, but again, future rewatch.
Yeah.
But it's a brilliant script as well. It's very wordy, which is not surprising because it was written by David Mamet, who was a playwright. He also wrote Glengarry Glen Ross.
Oh, amazing film.
Amazing film with a great script.
It's on the London West End. It's an actual show.
Oh, really? Yep. Oh, fantastic.
I've never seen it.
Yeah.
You've never seen Glengarry Glen Ross?
Oh, Alec Baldwin. Yeah. Like 10 minutes of Alec Baldwin, and he got himself an Oscar for it.
What's your name? Fuck you, that's my name.
Is that all he's in there for?
Always be closing. So
10 minutes and then he got an Oscar.
Yeah. It's
maybe
a brilliant.
Five.
And his role wasn't even in the play. Mamet wrote that specifically just for the film version.
Oh. Yeah.
And now on the Broadways, on the West End, they have like really high listed kind of actors playing that particular role. So they do it for 5 minutes and then fuck off back home.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's the life, isn't it?
I'll watch it.
And that's why David Mamet is so great. Such wordy, verbose, but thoroughly interesting scripts. And it's a film that I don't think was appreciated enough in its time. It was nominated for a few Oscars, but the only major category it was nominated in was Connery for Best Supporting Actor. It wasn't nominated for Best Picture, Best Direction, anything like that. But I think as history has gone by, it's grown in stature. People have realised that it really is a fucking masterpiece. One of the best gangster movies of all time. Now, there's a lot of competition there. You've got your Goodfellas and your Godfathers and so on and so forth, but it's right up there with them. It's competing. It's an incredible film.
Cool.
I thought maybe you would have gone with Ben's choice. I thought you were between the two.
I thought you were going to go for Untouchables.
I thought you were going to go for Scarface, Mark.
Oh!
It's up there. That would have been probably my number two.
Yeah, but remember, that's like 5 days long.
I wouldn't have watched it as prep. I'd have just been like, yeah, Scarface. Do you remember it? Not really, but Scarface is damn good.
See, I think it's overrated.
Really?
I've never really got the intense love for that film. I think it's a brilliant performance from Pacino.
Yeah.
But the film itself, I'm just kind of like, meh.
That's fair.
Yeah.
But the people go crazy for it. And it was a cool poster to have at uni.
Everyone had
that
it.
That and Kill
Everyone
Bill.
Everyone had it.
Got to have it. Yeah. So what of social media comment? Because, again, when we read out his name, I was a bit like, who?
Do that again.
I couldn't. It's a one-off.
I thought there was a ghost in the room.
But I was surprised by his kind of range of films. I didn't realise how much he had done.
And we've had a lot of different ones come in from our listeners on Twitter. Paul R. Green, at a.k.a. Paolo Verdi, has said The Untouchables. Mamet's script is a taut masterpiece. Every role is perfectly cast. And Morricone's score enhances every scene. I forgot that Ennio Morricone
had the score. When we talked about favourite score earlier, probably his work for anything that he's ever done. Mm-hmm. He's up there,
Good,
isn't
Bad
he?
And the Ugly.
The Thing. The Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I changed my answer earlier. Best score, Good, the Bad and the Ugly.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
On Facebook, Clive Bullock has said, Casualties of War, the best Vietnam movie since Apocalypse Now, and it was Michael J. Fox's first serious role.
Oh.
Now, I haven't seen this.
I haven't.
Me neither.
It's a very odd duo. I looked this up. It's Michael J. Fox and Sean Penn.
Bloody hell.
You don't imagine those two dudes.
Take my money.
Hey, it's peanut butter and jelly. You're meant to get together.
There we go. Nice.
On Twitter, Murphy, it's you? Question mark. Murphy, it's you?
I like that name.
We've got to go at the end like in Australia. Yeah. At Murphy's Boredom. They've said Carrie, so they've agreed with you too.
Yeah.
Which I think is absolutely fair. David Regotha, or Regoza, however you want to say it, a.k.a. World Forgot on Instagram, has gone with Body Double, which is again a film I haven't seen, but it's an erotic thriller starring Melanie Griffith, which apparently is quite good if you're into erotic thrillers, Mark.
It was very thrilling being in the field sometimes, but I wouldn't want to watch it as a whole. I don't know, man.
I wouldn't want to watch that at all, to be honest.
Coming soon to DVD.
No.
Coming soon. See what I did there?
I did.
Wow.
Because you emphasised it.
A lot of his films I've not heard of. I've not heard of one. I've not heard of one before.
Oh, you'll definitely know the next one.
Okay.
You'll definitely know this one. So Ed Sullivan on Twitter, at Eddie19666, has said Phantom of Paradise.
Oh,
now,
I know you
bloody love Phantom of Paradise.
I love it.
He said it's a gem. It's much better than Rocky Horror. And I was like, well, that's a weird thing to compare it to. But I looked it up and it is an apt comparison because it's apparently a rock opera horror comedy.
Oh.
As is Rocky Horror.
Nice.
There you go.
But, yep, never heard of it. On Facebook, Russell Hewitt has said Raising Kane. John Lithgow is great in this unsettling gem of a film.
I love that actor, so I'll watch it.
Yeah, John Lithgow's awesome. On Twitter, Spider Dan and the Secret Boars, at Dan_Boars, has said Blowout is an utter masterpiece.
I've actually seen that. Is that John Travolta?
It is.
That's a great film.
It is a great film.
Yes.
Yeah,
I don't think I have.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's brilliant, and it's based on Antonioni's classic Blow Up. Was it an Italian
film?
No,
I've seen that.
You've seen Blow Up.
I've seen Blow Up, yeah.
So it's a very similar sort of thing. So in Blow Up, someone was caught on film, wasn't
it? That's right,
yeah. Yep. Whereas in Blow Out, they're caught like on audio tape. But it's essentially the same
plot. For the modern times of that era.
I think that's less modern.
I don't know.
Audio is less modern.
God, I still think like penny farthings are like today's BMXs, so who knows?
Fucking hell.
On Facebook, Matthew Avery has said, Scarface for me, Pacino at his absolute finest.
I don't know, because the Dunkachino.
There we go.
That's Oscar-worthy for me. Correct. But what a range, man.
Yeah, he's the best in the business, or one of. LJ Human at Luke Human has said, Carlito's Way. He captures the era perfectly and draws great performances from Pacino, Penn and Mortensen. Have you seen Carlito's Way?
No.
That's a great film.
It's everyone's top 10 of all time.
If you're going to go away and watch any of these Brian De Palma films you haven't heard of, make it Carlito's Way.
Yeah, it's
tremendous.
Nice.
Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
Every single time.
Untouchables won by a distance.
It pissed it.
It pissed it.
Right.
With Scarface in second and Carlito's Way nipping at its heels in third.
What?
Surprisingly, no one voted for the first Mission Impossible film.
Oh, my God.
However, a lot of people did give it an honourable mention to it. They'd say, my vote is for Untouchables, but Mission Impossible's great. So a lot of people did mention it, as well they should, because it's fantastic.
Cool.
He has done a lot of shit.
Oh.
Let's get real. So I'm not surprised to report that there were no votes at all for the Nicolas Cage conspiracy dud Snake Eyes.
What? I demand a recount.
Or the Tom Hanks Bruce Willis bomb, The Bonfire of the Vanities.
Christ.
Or even worse, the terrible Danny DeVito mafia comedy Wise Guys.
Oh my God.
Nope, not watching that.
Don't ever watch that film.
No.
Don't ever watch that film, or else your eyes will just eject themselves from your skull.
Oh God.
Well, I'm not doing this.
I'm not doing this.
Bye.
I'm out.
You know when some people are like, I'll watch any actor in anything. So Kurt Russell, I'll watch him in anything.
Yeah.
Danny DeVito was one of them as well. I'd have been, I'll watch him in anything. Mm-hmm. But now I can't.
Don't watch that.
Is it that bad?
Oops.
Fuck. Who would you have voted for? What would be your film of his?
I definitely would have fought it out between Untouchables or Carlito's Way.
Nice.
Me too. Yeah,
Robert De Niro in Untouchables is absolutely amazing.
Yep.
Nice.
Correct.
I like it.
Sean Penn's hair in Carlito's Way.
Yes!
That's a good enough reason. I love it.
Oh, yes.
Whose turn is it to pick out of the magic box?
Is it me?
Yes.
Oh, I love this. Even though it's literally just picking at random.
Here we go.
I fucking love doing this. Please.
Be someone we know of.
This is very appropriate. You would think it was synergy, but Mark, next time round, we're going to be masturbating over Richard Linklater.
Yes! It's now time for the rewatch, and as you heard at the start of today's episode, it's a great sci-fi horror classic called Event Horizon.
Mm-hmm.
The year is 2047. 7 years have passed since the mysterious disappearance of Event Horizon, a spaceship that was sent to explore the outer limits of our solar system. Now it is time for a rescue mission to find the ship and bring it back, as well as any survivors. But are there any?
Oh my God!
I definitely wrote that. And that was definitely not taken from IMDb. If you've not seen this film, I actually suggest you go and watch it. It's not actually out on Blu-ray in the UK, I don't think.
Is it not?
No, I think it's DVD. It's one of those difficult ones to track down. I don't think it was on any of these streaming services, which is frustrating.
You can buy it through Amazon. You can rent it through Amazon.
Yeah.
Perfect. So do that.
Which is what I did. I didn't illegally download it. I definitely did not illegally download it.
Definitely not. So I'm really glad that it's available on Amazon Prime to purchase. I suggest you do that because we will be going into the plot of the film, major twists, and talking about what takes place on Event Horizon. So let's start by throwing this straight over to Ben, and I want to know what your thoughts are on this, to me, sci-fi horror masterpiece.
Compared to prestige space films like Alien or 2001, this is very cheap, lowbrow stuff. But that doesn't mean it isn't good. It's got a great hook and some unforgettable visuals. I love it.
Brilliant. Gemma.
I forgot how messed up this film is. I can forgive the Lawnmower Man-esque special effects because it is of its time. However, it's a fine sci-fi horror that builds layers and layers of tension only to unravel it to expose a terrifying heart. And I have no desire to watch this alone for future reference.
And that's it. For me, it's a scary film. I know there's a lot of horrors out there, and this shouldn't be as scary as it is, but it is. And I remember watching it when I was a lot younger and being terrified. Considering the director did Resident Evil,
shame.
Alien vs. Predator,
no.
Shame.
Considering he did this, I can't believe it's the same director.
He did, however, do Mortal Kombat, which I will defend until my dying day. I fucking love that
That's
film.
That's like my other half. He loves Mortal Kombat.
Good. Everyone that's ever owned a SNES or Mega Drive will love it.
Your soul is mine. Finish him.
Fatality.
So good. But anyway, as an actual film, I think it's... I know what you said there, and some of the CGI is rubbish, but for the time that it came out, I think it's brilliant. And the atmosphere throughout this film, from start to finish, for me, is a brilliant, brilliant film. And for 90 minutes, I'm entertained.
Yeah, and the film does a really great job for the first hour of slowly building up the suspense, slowly building up the tension, and then going really fucking hard with the weirdness just in the last half hour. I think it's brilliantly paced.
Yeah. I do love the horror element to it, because I think when you think of horror, you think films like Hellraiser. And that film in particular is what I kept thinking about when I was watching Event Horizon.
Yeah.
I think it takes a lot of inspiration from the likes of Pinhead, from the likes of that kind of body horror that you've seen in that film before. And I really liked how the two linked together, and it still managed to make itself its own entity.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I think it did take a lot from Hellraiser. I think that's one of the great hooks of this film. When they were first writing it, apparently it was going to be an alien entity that was taking over the ship.
Right.
And they thought, well, we don't want to do that because that's been done to death. So they came up with this hook of, okay, we've got this gravity drive, but instead of opening a portal to elsewhere in space, it opens a portal to hell.
Calm down.
That's fucking brilliant. That's just a great hook.
That should be a tagline.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I want to see that film. I know I have seen it, but I'm like, yeah. But I think, I know what you said, Gemma, about the special effects, but remember when it was made.
Yes.
Remember the budget and everything else. I think at the start, when we're seeing those objects flying through the sky and we see a CGI watch being twisted around, at that moment, I was like, that looks fucking good, considering.
Even the blood droplets.
Oh.
Just in zero gravity. I'm all right with that.
All the gore in this film.
Yeah.
All the gore's fantastic, but sticking with the effects for a minute. One of the quirks that Paul W.S. Anderson has, the director, is he loves a bit of slow-mo. Whenever there's an action beat, he loves to put slow-mo in. And it's always to the detriment of the action. It's an annoying quirk, but it's especially detrimental when you have slightly ropey CGI. When you see the CGI at full speed, it's fine. But if you slow it down, you can then see the nuts and bolts. So there's a bit where I think it's the Lewis and Clark blows up.
Yeah.
And the first couple of beats are in slow-mo, and it looks like bits of polystyrene flowing over the screen. It's dog shit. And then it goes back to full speed. And it looks great. The effects look great. It's like you've purposely undercut yourself by slow-moing it. It looks wank.
I watched this. As you know, I got a surround sound, and the subwoofer for this film, that's the ultimate. If this is my new demo one now, I don't think I've ever seen an explosion sound so fucking powerful in my life. It's brilliant as a demo. If you are just about to buy a 5.1 surround sound, get this.
Where would you buy such a thing from?
Richer sound.
There it is.
I want to talk about the acting, though, because there's some great performances in this film and people that you wouldn't expect. But Sam Neill, I think, is the, as Ben would say, MVP of this film. He's brilliant.
He's fantastic, isn't he?
I love him in Jurassic Park a lot. In this film, he lets his guard down and just goes with it. To know how much gore he has, the blood and everything, he must have been having a blast on set.
Yeah.
I like the development of his character, because at the first three quarters of the film, he's very in control. He's mourning the death of his wife due to a suicide, and he's very much in control of his actions. But as soon as everything starts going tits up, he actually commits to the madness of what his character becomes. He just allows himself to be immersed into this sort of hell portal that's opened up. And do you remember the scene in Sunshine when Mark Strong's character kind of turns himself into an inside-out sausage?
I don't think that was the description.
It was Mr. Sausage, wasn't it? Hello, Mr. Sausage. But his kind of character, when he decides to just, you know, succumb to the dark side, it's kind of like if Pinhead from Hellraiser had a baby with a barbecue bratwurst, it would represent Dr. Weir that he becomes. And he's still terrifying. Like, everything about him when he turns into that kind of side of his persona is horrifying.
Yeah.
I think it must have been a financial decision, because at first, when he pulls out his eyes and you can see the cavities in his eyes, which they've had to use CGI to do, you only see that for a little bit, and then afterwards he kind of sews them up. And I think that must have been because they wanted to use fewer CGI shots. But I think he looked scarier, weirder when you could see the holes rather than when they were just sewn up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all that makeup at the end, all the sort of practical effects stuff on his face, that looked amazing. I thought it was all done really well. When he's kind of got that like cut all down his face and across
all diagonal
all the
lines.
Blood and everything, I think it looked brilliant. I was convinced that was real.
It's harrowing.
Yeah.
Absolutely harrowing. But on the other side of that, I also loved Lawrence Fishburne in this because he's so formidable and so cool and calm as Captain Miller. The way how he kind of has this fearless approach to everything, he always has the best interests of his crew rather than himself. He's a complete hero in this film.
Yeah, he's fantastic. He's a brilliant person to cast as a ship captain or a police captain or the captain of anything because he has such a domineering presence, doesn't he?
He's safe. He's never going to win an Oscar. He probably has now. Have I missed that?
I'm sure he's been nominated at least.
Yeah, but he hasn't won. And I'm never. He's never shit in anything. I'll never slag him off.
No, he's excellent. He's always excellent for me.
And hey, he's in The Matrix, and that's what it's all about.
That is true.
There we go. There is one character I really felt got a shit end of the deal, and that is poor Justin. Poor baby bear.
Justin, my very own Justin.
Queen of Dreams.
That's Claire.
Oh, can we watch that?
You have splashed all over me.
You want some German in you? Yeah. Why do you feel sorry for him?
Well, I mean, he does not get a great deal out of this film. I mean, for starters, he gets sucked into that hell portal, then goes into a coma, wakes up and starts spouting nonsense about the dark. Then, out of everything, he decides to go into an airlock and push a button that's going to turn his insides outside.
It's a bit bleak.
It's not fair. There should be justice for Justin. Alice Clare.
There's your hashtag justice for Justin.
Alice Clare.
But poor kid.
Oh, fucking.
Am I right in thinking he was around a lot in the mid-90s? I think he might have been a John Bon Jovi music vid.
I've never seen
you're asking
John
the
bon
biggest
Jovi.
Bon Jovi
well,
fan
of course,
here.
Yeah.
I mean, fucking hell.
I'm sure he was kind of like one of those sort of mid-player faces you see in like sort of teen movies in the 90s. But yeah, poor Justin. Shame.
Going back to the visuals for a minute, it's not just the gore, the blood and guts. There are some other really beautiful shots, I think. There's one where Weir is climbing through the vent. It's kind of a Die Hard type vent shot. But instead of just being a classic metal wall vent, it's circuit boards. It's those bright green computer circuit boards. And it's beautiful, that shot, that kind of emerald green as he's walking
it's
through.
It's luminous, isn't it?
It's gorgeous. I really love that shot.
It is like the Matrix green stuff all coming down, the neons and everything.
Very sci-fi-esque.
But all this, the sort of spacecraft and everything, I know it's all figures and, you know, it's all kind of practical, but I think it didn't look like a film that's 20 odd years again.
No, it doesn't. And especially the interiors of the ship. The interiors are specifically designed. I watched a YouTube video about this. The interiors were specifically designed to look gothic. So they've got these gothic columns in there. And some of the doorways are coffin-shaped.
Yes.
And then got all these spikes on them. Oh, it's bizarre.
I thought it was like the mouth of hell.
Yeah.
So when it opened up, you've got the teeth coming out. And then when the door closes behind them, it's like the mouth shutting behind them. Mm-hmm. Like they've just swallowed them whole.
I've never seen a film on IMDb that gets such a complete mix of reviews.
Oh, yeah.
One star, worst film ever. Literally, why is Ridley Scott not sued him? This is an alien copy. This is shit. And then, Unforgiven masterpiece. People read to realise this is the best film ever. Biggest scare I've ever had in cinema history. There's no one in the middle.
I think it's 26% on Rotten Tomatoes. But Rotten Tomatoes is nothing to aspire to.
It's 27% on Rotten Tomatoes and it's 35 on Metacritic.
Fucking hell.
It was absolutely destroyed by the critics when it came out and it bombed at the box office. But it did good business on VHS. It was a home video success and has become a cult favourite. Mm-hmm. Hence why we enjoy it.
I've always wanted to see the director's cut because he's always said there's a lot more.
So this is it. So he wanted the original cut was over half an hour longer than the theatrical cut, and after some time he wanted to reassemble a director's cut, but a lot of the footage was either lost or was poorly stored. Some of it was stored, fuck knows why, in a salt mine in Transylvania. This is true. And when they went and got it, it was just degraded so badly they couldn't use it.
Which I hate.
I bloody hate it when they leave it in a salt mine in Transylvania.
I know.
It's the worst.
That's where we keep all our old backup episodes.
That's right. And it's a shame because it would have been great. And some of the footage has made its way online, but it's so degraded. It's the bits, the footage of hell, the hell dimension, like the blood orgy, they call it. There's more footage of that.
Whoa.
But it's really poor quality, and it's a shame, because I would have loved to have seen a full director.
I still can't quite come to terms with this. Where should we store it? Well, we've got a nice studio, we've got some, like, you know, libraries where we could give
Transylvania.
Salt
come
mine.
On, let's go.
Salt Why? Mine in Transylvania.
Why? One-way Why? Ticket. Mm-hmm.
Fucking idiot. And then he moans, oh, it's not very good quality. What an idiot. I'm sorry. Do you know this
I don't think it was the director's choice.
But somebody... should have had a better responsibility. What I like about this film as well is it's an 18, which is quite rare now. You don't think of these films. If it came out now, it'd probably be a 15 or a 12A. And I like that. And I think because of the blood and the violence, it deserves that title.
It does. It does.
What's your favourite violent bit of the film? Because I've got one.
I think all the blood in his tongue all coming out with that horrible fucking gore. That's horrible. That image sticks with me of all that blood coming out of his mouth. I don't like it.
DJ, when he gets spatchcocked like a chicken.
Oh, Christ.
Gets completely gutted with his innards, and then he's kind of like flayed like some kind of skin angel at the top.
Yeah, that's pretty.
It's like, ooh.
Pretty horrific.
I like the bit when Justin, my very own Justin, is in the airlock and the pressure's dropping, and then he starts to bleed from his eyes.
Yeah.
That's fucked up.
Ugh. It's not nice.
Not really.
But I've enjoyed revisiting it. And I want to score it, I think.
You do that.
So who did I throw it to first? Was it you, Ben?
Probably.
I think it was. Fuck knows. Give us your score.
Oh, it reminds me very much of Sunshine, which Gemma mentioned. I think the two films have very similar kind of plots. I think Sunshine is definitely the superior film. But I like this a lot. I'm going to give it a very high 7.
I'm happy. Gemma?
Ditto, ditto, ditto. I enjoyed it. It was great to revisit. I'm sure I'll be rewatching it at some point in the future. And me too. I shall give it a high 7 out of 10.
I think it deserves slightly better. I think it is a genuine masterpiece.
It's everything is
for
to
the
you.
Time. Considering his CV is so fucking poor, to have this one, this gem amongst the pile of shite, you got to give him credit. So he gets an 8 from me, but that doesn't change the overall score. So, Event Horizon gets a skip to the end, 7 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And whose rewatch choice is it next?
It's my rewatch choice next. Wow, we have got a great big film on our next episode, and it's certainly going to be one that we're going to be digesting heavily. So for that reason, I'm going to go for a bit of a smaller film. And this isn't one of those like, oh, quick turnaround, surprise, it's a big one.
It's Brick again.
No, I'm actually going to go for something that is quite a sweet, small, indie film. It's going to be a film that's going to be perfect, especially considering the massive hangover we're going to have following on from Skipfest. So on the next episode, we're going to be watching Ryan Gosling in Lars and the Real Girl.
Oh! So it's time for round two of our brand new quiz, Lost the Plot Again.
Nice.
Because Mark has no imagination. So if you want to know how this works, it's really fucking easy. I've got 10 films. For each film, I have the IMDb description of said film. And if you want to know why we're being that lazy, it's because that's what Mark does every time he has to describe a film. He's not capable of writing his own description.
Never.
Lazy.
It's true.
So that's how the game works. I will begin to describe the film using the IMDb explanation. And what Gemma and Mark, who are the competitors today, have to do is shout out the answer, the film that I'm referring to. You have to shout your name out first. So Gemma, you shout Gemma.
Gemma.
Mark, you shout Mark.
Not Ben.
Are we square on that? Does that make sense to
everybody? Yes.
You don't have to wait for me to finish. You can shout out as soon as you know. If you get it right, you get a point. If you get it wrong, you're locked out, and then the other person has a free go.
It's really, really straightforward.
There's nothing else for me to say. It really is that basic. Last time round, it was me versus Gemma. And it was a tight old contest. Mm. I won, but barely.
6-5 in the end.
It was 6-5. I won on the tiebreaker.
It was a good old game.
So it's the same thing here today. I've got 10, but if we need to go to the tiebreaker, I do have an extra one.
Come on.
So are you guys happy? You understand?
Yes. I'm happy, but I'm a bit like, oh, pressure. And then Graham's here watching over me, and it just feels like it's stressful, isn't it?
It is stressful. As if we're not sweating enough in this hot box flat of mine.
It's about to get even sweatier.
And Poochie, you have to win today to be in a chance. Otherwise, you've lost both.
I do.
But it's all about taking part that matters.
Nah.
Well, that's what a loser would say, Mark.
Correct.
She has got the belt at the moment as well.
That's true.
So.
That's true.
But I'll be relinquishing it after this.
Are you ready for number one?
Yeah.
Eyes down then. When a simple jewellery heist goes horribly wrong, the surviving criminals begin to suspect that one of them is a police informant.
Mark.
Go on.
Snatch.
Incorrect.
Ah!
Wrong.
Right, Graham knows it. Graham's nodding like it. Gemma, you've got a free shout at it.
Okay.
Do you want me to read it to you again?
Can you read it to me again, please?
When a simple jewellery heist goes horribly wrong, the surviving criminals begin to suspect that one of them is a police informant.
Gemma?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I genuinely don't know. Fuck.
This is like the easiest one I've got as well. So if you jabronis don't know it, I don't know what to do.
I'll probably hold my hand up and say, yes, I am Ms. Jabroni for today. Is it... Fucking hell. Oh, tits, I don't know. The Departed.
Incorrect. Graham, shout out the answer, please.
Reservoir Dogs.
Of course it's fucking Reservoir Dogs. You absolute mugs.
This is the standard you're going to get now for another 9.
Come on, Mark, let's do this.
So Graham's got 1 point. Yeah.
Are we ready for the second one?
Go on.
A boy inadvertently breaks 3 important rules concerning his new pet.
Gemma.
Go on, Gemma.
Gremlins.
Of course it's Gremlins.
Yeah!
Mark.
Billy.
You even referenced the 3 rules earlier in the show and you still didn't get it.
Oh, I like that though.
Point to Gemma.
Yes.
Are you ready for the third one?
Come on.
A man, mistaken for a millionaire of the same name, seeks restitution for his ruined rug and enlists
Gemma.
The
Big Lebowski.
It is the Big Lebowski.
You've got to be quick.
Yes.
Gemma's out in the lead 2-0. Are you ready for the next one?
Yep.
A high school student is accidentally sent 30 years into the past in a time-travelling DeLorean. Gemma?
Fucking hell.
Back to the Future.
Of course it is.
So quick.
I've purposely used all of your favourite films, Mark. You're shitting the bed.
He's done a massive turd right in the mattress.
Bloody hell.
So it's 3-0 to Gemma.
It's the taken part that takes... That's all that matters,
what?
Right?
Yeah,
that's easy for you to say.
Nice work.
Are you ready for the next one?
Go on.
A horde of mutated birds descends upon a quiet town.
Mark.
Go on.
Birdemic.
It is! Yes!
Perfect.
Well done, Mark.
I don't want to be proud of that.
I literally thought you said perfect then. Like,
did you know that?
What?
Birdemic.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's a good film.
The sequel's
not as good.
Isn't it?
No. There is actually a Birdemic too. I'm not bullshitting you.
I'm aware.
Shocking
of
horror.
It's my next rewatch. Are you ready for the next one?
Yeah.
The presidencies of Kennedy and Johnson, the events of Vietnam, Watergate, and other history unfold through the perspective...
Gemma.
Gemma.
Forrest Gump.
It is Forrest Gump.
Forrest Dump.
Correct. Yeah. It is 4-1.
Forrest Chump.
4-1 to Gemma. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4 to go. So you can still win, Mark.
Yep.
But you've got to be on it.
Yeah.
You've got to be on your game.
I've got to shut you out.
Are we ready for the next one?
Yes.
A boy who communicates with spirits seeks the help of...
Gemma.
Gemma.
Sixth Sense.
Yeah.
Fucking hell. So quick.
You're getting destroyed, Mark.
It's fine.
Destroyed.
It's because I want her to win, so next week it's all about can she, you know, that's what it's all about.
You cannot now win. It's 5-1, there are only 3 more to go.
Okay.
You are fucked. Are you ready for this?
I'm going to try and get a good score for my mum who listens. Sorry, Mum.
A computer hacker learns from a mysterious...
Mark.
Yeah.
I just thought
you've got to have an answer.
Come on.
War Games.
No.
What? I think we've mentioned it twice on the podcast.
All right, Gemma, I'm going to read you the whole thing.
Thanks, Ben.
A computer hacker learns from mysterious rebels about the true nature of his reality and his role in the war against its controllers.
Is it The Matrix?
Of course it's The Matrix, not fucking War Game.
You said my favourite films. You know what I mean?
And they're not all your favourite films. I just used a couple.
Oh, bastard.
Anyway.
Rigged.
Another point for Gemma. It is now 6-1.
Okay, I'm happy with this.
2 more to play, Mark. Try and get some credit back.
Okay. Yes.
An NYPD officer tries to save his wife and several others taken hostage by German... Yep.
Die Hard.
It is Die Hard.
Fucking hell.
It's an absolute mauling.
I've got 1 point, though. So it's not a whitewash.
Well done. And here's the final one of the original 10. Peter Parker is beset with troubles in his failing personal life as he battles a brilliant scientist named...
Mark.
Go on.
Spider-Man 2.
It is Spider-Man 2! It was the one where
I tried
to swerve, yeah, and you got it right.
Thank you.
So that's the end of the game. Gemma has won handily. 7-2. However... Would you like the tiebreaker as the real quiz?
Thank you.
This is the real quiz.
Are you happy to put everything on the line for
this? No, I'm not. I think I've won this fair and square.
Yeah, you have today. You've earned it.
You're ready.
Go on.
Johnny is a successful banker who
lives... Mark.
Gemma.
The Room.
It is The Room! Gemma's battered you, mate.
I know.
Destroyed oh, hi, Victory.
The fact that I've only got one more point than Graham is scary.
Who wasn't even playing.
I'm sorry, man. Oh, my God. That was good fun.
That was good fun.
So now it's me versus Ben.
Ooh. Yeah.
And I have to win.
I should be games master.
Otherwise, if I win, it'll all be even.
That's it. If you win, yeah. It's one apiece. If you lose, yeah. I am the champion, my friend.
And you take the belt from Pooch.
Big time. No.
Wow. Stay tuned for that in 2 weeks' time.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It can be something old, it can be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too. It's been another great fortnight, lots of hot, hot content.
Hot, 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 hot,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm intrigued to see what you've gone with. So Gemma, I'm going to throw this out to you first. What have you got for us?
I've got a documentary.
Ooh.
It's called Won't You Be My Neighbour?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's directed by Morgan Neville, who did 20 Feet of Stardom, another good documentary, and it delves into the life of Fred Rogers. Now, he was a well-known, loved children's television presenter in America who hosted Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. So not as well-known as in the UK, but certainly big business in America. But we will know a little bit more about him towards the end of the year with Tom Hanks playing him in A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've ever had a bad day, it could be a rough day in the office, or you just want to escape the absolute horrors and bullshit that the world is currently showing on a daily, may I recommend this documentary as a remedy, because it's a wonderful reminder that there's some really great people out there. Now, Rogers was originally going to become a pastor, but decided that television was a really great way to speak to kids and teach them, you know, good things in life. So he decided he was going to be a TV show presenter. And he provided real sort of groundbreaking episodes which addressed sort of what was happening in the world. It taught kids about, you know, being comfortable with themselves and just being kind to people around them. And it was pretty kind of groundbreaking, kind of punk stuff when you think about it, because there was a few occasions where he really broke the mold and challenged what was going on in society at the time. So one episode sees Mr. Rogers inviting Officer Clemens, who was the neighborhood's police officer. Now, he was a black man, and he asked him to join him in a foot bath. And the reason why this is so important, because during the time of 1969, news broke out of black sunbathers being kicked out of public pools that were essentially filled with white people. And what white people were doing was pouring bleach into these pools to try and encourage them to get out. It was pretty horrific stuff. And we also see him tackling subjects such as the Vietnam War, the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, and death itself. So he was really kind of, the platform that he was given was something quite groundbreaking that kids would never understand at that time. Even now, I think a lot of things are really sort of soft-coated for kids. So when things do happen, they don't fully understand what's going on.
Mm.
But there's also a really beautiful moment, which, I'll be honest, the whole documentary had me in tears. But there's one particular moment where he's having a chat with this kid called Jeff Erlanger, who is in a wheelchair due to tumours in his spine. And the conversation between the two is just so beautiful and so moving, because Fred Rogers was talking to him as a human being. He wasn't trying to mollycoddle this kid whatsoever. He was just talking to him, just seeing how his day was and why he was in a wheelchair, and just making the kid feel so special. And in fact, the whole documentary has that feeling. You know, this is a man who understood life in many ways that people don't back then, and still don't even now. He was a man that promoted kindness. He taught these lessons through puppetry, through song, through imaginative stories for kids and adults alike. And if I was to say something about this documentary, amongst everything that is fucking happening in the world, which is fucking horrific, please watch this, because you will understand that there really is some good people out there. And Fred Rogers was definitely one of those good guys.
He was a beloved guy, and it's not surprising that they've picked Tom Hanks to play him.
Absolutely.
Because he's a beloved guy as well. The film looks really interesting, because it's filmed from the point of view of a journalist.
That's right.
Who goes to meet him, and it's a true story.
It is.
This really happened with this journalist, and it's played by Matthew Rhys from The Americans, who's a fantastic mm-hmm. actor. And it's a guy who he's kind of like a jaded, cynical journalist. And yeah. I think he doesn't kind of believe that Mr. Rogers could be that lovely and mm-hmm. that honest and
yeah.
honourable. And then it kind of overtakes him. He kind of starts to go that way himself, because yeah. he's around someone who is that positive.
Yeah.
It rubs off on him.
Yeah, I would probably say about three quarters of the documentary itself, I was just overwhelmed with tears. It's something that I've not seen in many different things before, but it really did move me. It without being corny, it does make me want to be a better person. It makes me want to actually give people a chance, because there's no point for being a dick in life.
There's your message there.
Excellent pick, Gemma. What have you got, Mark?
I've got a book called The Guide to the Movieverse, which is wrote by the guys from Den of Geek.
Written by, but yeah.
I tried to remember that from last week. Mm-hmm. Simon Brew, and I brought it with me. Now, the reason I brought it with me is it's £5 on Amazon, and I had a private message from one of our listeners called Rich, and he does a podcast, and he said to me, if Skip to the End wrote a book, this would be the book. Yeah. And I was like, okay, is it offensive? Is it ridiculous? Is it spelling mistakes? You pick anything from literally a chapter and you open it up. So I've just literally opened How the 90s Changed Blockbuster Cinema. So there's pages all about that. The man who's made the world's most expensive film 4 times. It's all crazy stuff. The 90s spec script gold rush. Everything is so random, but it's put together as we would. Actors cast in comic book movies who never got to play the role. It's fascinating. It's that coffee book table where you'll just pick something, read about it. What have I said wrong?
Coffee book table.
Coffee book table. Things like that. And even stuff like, I love this, smaller films that went big, so massive small budgets like The Blair Witch, it goes into it, it tells you all about this. It's one of those trivia books that you'd want if you're on, like, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, you know, those sorts of things. But you'll never get bored of it, you'll pass it to your friends. It's a really good book. I read it this week while I was at work, on my break.
Yeah.
And one of my favourite parts, and I've got, I actually put this here, was the film's rumoured to be ghost-directed. You know, where they're always about on the set, and they have all these, like, backgrounds and all this. It's fascinating, guys. It's £5 on Amazon at the moment. It's normally £16, and they've just released one on TV as well. So Ben, you'll be all over the TV one.
I'll be all over the book.
It's both books. Brilliant,
for sure.
Honestly. And I love the guys at the Den of Geek. I've read their sites many times.
Yeah.
I always like the way they are. They're very honest. They are like us. They say how it is. They don't try and be all hoity-toity and say how things are and use these over-the-top words. They're humans that talk about this. It's got the Mark Kermode has even done a foreword on it, so he's talking all about it. It's brilliant, guys. It's gold, and I can't wait to kind of get the TV one now. Cool. Brilliant.
I will read the hell out of that for sure.
£5 for an actual book.
Are you on commission? Because you keep talking about the price from Amazon.
Is that not cheap?
I'm telling you, Prime,
it's cheap, yeah.
It's not £10. It's not £7. It's not even £6. £5.
I'll even do you 2 for £8. Yeah.
It's just cheap. I just couldn't believe it. When it turned up, I was expecting it to be like a short little thin book.
It's cheap.
There's loads in it. Look at it all. Cheap. And I just can't wait to read it all. I think it's brilliant.
Mm-hmm. And then when you finish it, I'll read it all over again.
I'll sell it you for £4.
Oh, bargain.
Making profit off this.
But yeah, it's good. Get on it.
It's a great choice. My pick this time round is an Amazon Prime TV show, The Boys.
Oh.
I need to watch this.
The Boys is my favourite comic book series of all time. I say that without hyperbole. It's written by my favourite comic book writer, Garth Ennis, and drawn by my favourite comic book artist, Derek Robertson. The comic and the show are set in a world where superheroes exist, but are more celebrities than heroes. They're only in it for the fame, the adulation, and the power. They're often self-centred, violent, and cruel in private, but they put on this facade of heroism in public to appease the corporations that control them. So this corporation called Vought that basically runs them, runs all these superheroes. But because of this, because the Supes can't be trusted, there's this vigilante team known as The Boys, who keep a close eye on them, and they smack them back into line if they get too big for their boots. The leader of The Boys is a character called Billy Butcher, who's a tough nut cockney, and he's played by Carl Urban. He's absolutely brilliant. He plays the role brilliant with his take-no-shit attitude. He's excellent, he's funny, he's nihilistic, a total badass. The only downside is that his cockney accent is fucking atrocious.
Oh.
It is the worst one you've ever heard, because he's a Kiwi.
Yeah.
So this little Kiwi yiss kind of pops through every now and again. It's not great. It's already been renewed for season 2, so I'm hoping in the year interim he can work on his fucking accent. But it's a minor quibble, because he's fantastic. There are also really great performances from Elizabeth Shue, who we don't see a lot of.
I love her.
Yeah, she plays the vice president of Vought, the company that runs the Supes. She's fantastic. There's also Erin Moriarty, who plays Starlight. She's a young, naive, idealistic hero who's not yet been corrupted by the rest of the Supes. And then there's Jack Quaid, who is the son of Dennis Quaid and Meg Ryan.
Whoa.
And he's a great young actor. And he's a young man who joins up with the boys after experiencing the tragedy at the hands of the Supes. The real revelation of the show, however, is a guy called Anthony Starr. He plays a character called Homelander. Now, Homelander is essentially an amalgam of Captain America and Superman. He's the most powerful and beloved hero in this universe, but he's really a petulant child and a total fucking psychopath. And Star plays him flawlessly. This guy who can present this front of normality, this front of heroism, but underneath it there's just this mania bubbling away, just bubbling at the surface, ready to explode at any time. He's completely fucking deranged, and he can be hilarious 1 minute and quite disturbing the next. It's a brilliant performance. It's worth watching the show for him alone. And the rest of the show is great, but he is on a different level entirely. It also features a cameo from Simon Pegg, or it's more of a cameo. He's in a few episodes, but he plays Quaid's character's dad, which is a great bit of meta casting, because in the comic book, the character of Huey, who Quaid plays, the character of Huey was based on Simon Pegg. Derek Robertson's art drew him to look like Simon Pegg.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and when they were trying to get this done as a film a few years back, it was going to be Pegg. They were trying to get him to play Huey in it, but as the years have gone by, Pegg's a little bit too old to play the character now, so they brought him in as the character's dad.
Nice.
Which I think is a beautiful little meta touch. I don't want to say too much about the show, because I think there's just too much fun, too much there for people to enjoy, and I don't want to step on anyone's enjoyment. It's violent, it's profane, it's timely and surprisingly poignant in a lot of parts. If I had to criticise it, it could probably use a bit more action. It's not as funny or as outrageous as the comic, but as I say, it's my favourite comic of all time, so yeah. I was never going to think it was as good, of course. But there are some insanely gory and innovative death scenes. I'll tell you a couple of these death scenes off air, because I don't want to ruin it for people, but it's fucking crazy. The chemistry between the characters is insane, and I'm really, really looking forward to season two.
I will be watching this because it is on my hit list. I will be watching this very, very soon.
I saw it come through a lot on social media. Hell of a lot. Yeah. And people are just saying, just the fact that Carl Urban's back on the screen, that makes everyone's day.
Oh, yeah.
And Carl Urban has got a history in comic book stuff, hasn't he? He played Judge Dredd. He was brilliant in the film.
I loved him in that.
Loved that film. That should be a future rewatch as well.
Yeah.
That
film's killer.
He played Scourge in Thor Ragnarok as well.
Yeah,
so
he knows his way around
a comic book adaptation.
Yeah.
But it's definitely worth watching. I blitzed it literally in one night. The day it came out, obviously, because I'm such a fan of the book. It came out on a Friday, and I watched the whole thing in one night.
That's a big one for Amazon, because I know Netflix have been killing it recently with the TV, and Amazon have got their one now, and I think it's broke records for Amazon's the most downloaded or watched show
that
they've done so far. So to know we've already got Grit Series 2, you must be like, come on, give it me now!
Loving it. Yeah. I don't want to have to wait a year.
But if it means his accent's going to get perfected.
Touch wood.
Is it that bad?
It's fucking atrocious, dude. And the thing is, it's inconsistent.
Yeah.
So there are a couple of times where he refers to people as twats, so he'll say twat, but then another time he'll say twat, which is the American way of saying it, and it's really fucking annoying. It's like, be consistent. I'd rather him be consistently bad than inconsistent.
Yeah.
But anyhow, it's a minor quibble. Go out and check out the boys.
Cool.
I got some news for you both.
Oh yeah?
So you know when I always leave here and I literally never do anything that I say? Ever.
Yes.
All
yes.
the time.
This is no secret.
Yes.
Since the last recording, I have watched all 8 episodes of The Act.
Which was Gemma's pick last time round.
I promised you I'd go and watch it, and I did. And it literally, I did the whole week subscription, so it was $4.99, but then you didn't have to pay it as long as I cancelled it straight away.
Yep.
Ben, that works.
Love it. Life
absolutely
hack.
Love it.
Life hack.
It is genuinely one of the best TV shows I've seen in probably 10 years. The acting is brilliant. As much as Patricia Arquette is fantastic, it's all about the daughter.
Yeah. Joey King,
when she turns and towards the later episodes and we see her put the wig on and she gets with her boyfriend and then they start doing this scheme. To see the turn from this sweet girl that's, you know, kind of disabled, that everyone's feeling sorry for and we think she's so fragile. To see the way she turns, that deserves every award. I've not seen a performance like that in only 8 episodes. Remember, it's not 24 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
To see how she's actually had that whole story, and I was captivated. No, it's all real is even scarier. And I think the show kept reminding me at the start of the credits and the end, this is based on true events. And I was like, oh, fucking hell.
Yeah.
This is too much to digest. But the finale is some of the best TV I've seen. I don't want to spoil it because I know you recommended it, but the intensity of the sound while the main scene was happening with the mum and the boyfriend, I was literally feeling sick. I was on the edge of my seat. Couldn't be happier with a recommendation.
Yeah,
so,
I'm really glad you went away and watched it because it is fantastic. Obviously, Gemma and I raved about it.
I'm going to do it with the boys because everybody's raving on about
it.
And it's on Amazon and I can do it without having to cancel a subscription.
The Boys was one of our most popular recommendations. We've had nods from Andrew Moores, Chris Evans, Russell Hewitt, Kevin Horton, Scott Tiffin, Damian Bullock, Lyndon Wells, Joey Dollar and more. That was just the first few I grabbed with a lot of people. It's been fantastic. But we've had a lot of great responses on Twitter as usual and all of social media. On Twitter, Jamie Wilson at Jamza32 said, I'm currently reading Bret Easton Ellis's book White and it's damn good. I've not read that. It's the only Bret Easton Ellis book I haven't read. because I think it's new. So I'm going to get hold of that.
And he did Rules of Attraction, didn't he?
He did Rules of Attraction, yeah. American Psycho. Oh,
what a great record.
Yeah, fantastic. On Facebook, David Knapp has said, the I Made My Girlfriend Watch Wrestling podcast.
I like the name.
Me too. Yeah. The host tries to get his girlfriend to love wrestling by watching some of his favourite matches with her. Her commentary, reactions and the nicknames she gives to the wrestlers are brilliant.
I'm sold.
I want to listen to that.
I've not checked it out yet, but I'm definitely going to. That sounds fantastic. On Twitter, Mackenzie Lambert at CinemaMac has said, the book Why We Sleep by Matthew Walker. It's convinced me we need to bring back siesta culture and get rid of daylight saving. Now, I've got this book and I haven't got round to reading it yet. Someone right. recommended it to me about a year ago. But it is a fantastic sort of scientific book, but it's kind of pop culture science. It's an easy read, I've heard. It's meant to be very, very good.
Cool.
Nice.
I'm going to check that out. On Facebook, Simon Williams has said, I've played Inside on Xbox One. Fantastic, atmospheric, side-scrolling puzzle game. Couldn't really tell you what the story is, but it's creepy as hell and the ending is batshit crazy.
I love batshit crazy.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Me too. We've got another book here from Boba Crum at jholland15. He said, High Concept by Charles Fleming. It's the tale of producer Don Simpson, who, along with Jerry Bruckheimer, was responsible for classics like Top Gun, Beverly Hills Cop, etc. And it covers all the excesses and scandals of the 80s and 90s in Hollywood.
That sounds really good.
That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Definitely going to get that one. On Facebook, Dara Begley has said, I went to see the Hot 8 Brass Band, a mix of classic New Orleans brass band, jazz, funk and hip-hop. Amazing gig and fantastic energy. Gemma is nodding her head like crazy.
Yeah, because they're in Chef.
Oh, really?
They did Sexual Healing. Mm. And it's a great cover. They're, like, especially with like the weather we've just recently had with all the sunshine, they are great to listen to for that as a backdrop.
Nice.
Lovely stuff. Mm. On Twitter, Chatpack Podcast at Chatpack Live has said, Outer Wilds is a pretty awesome little game if you haven't played it yet. Mm. I haven't, but I've heard good things. And then finally, M. Van Dyke, a.k.a. Amizzle Van Dizzle on Instagram, has said, the new series of Orange is the New Black. Sad it's the last one.
Yes.
Graham's covering his ears. He doesn't want to be spoiled. No. Have you two seen it yet?
No, I'm going to.
I've finished it.
You finished it. It's fucking fantastic, isn't it, Gem?
Oh, I cried my freaking eyes out. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. A really great way to end it. I'm not going to say anything to spoil it whatsoever, don't you worry. But it's worth it.
Every character gets a fitting send-off. Yeah. And that doesn't mean a happy ending. Some do, some don't. But they get a fitting send-off. It's brilliant. To the point where, after I finished it, I immediately went back and started watching the whole series again.
Yep.
I'm up to midway through season two now.
Yeah, exactly the same.
The character for me, like Piper's always been the focal character, and Tasty's had a lot in recent years, but it's all about Cindy for me. Every Cindy storyline fucking breaks me. She's incredible.
I would die for Tasty.
Tasty's amazing.
I would throw myself on the sword just so that way she gets to live and have everything good happen to her. So I'd die for Tasty.
But it is tremendous. If you've not watched it yet,
no, they've not advertised it very much. Like, it's just one of those ones that was like, oh, by the way, the final season's now on Netflix. Like, what the fuck?
I think because of pop culture, the amount of popularity it's gotten through people watching it, I think that kind of bankrolls itself in a way. But it is worth investing. I mean, I think the average lifespan of a season is probably about 3 days.
Yeah.
You just want to binge it and just continue watching it, but it is extraordinary and I'm so sad it's over, but it's the right time.
It is the right time.
Wow.
It went out on a high as well. You could argue it's the best season. It's
hands down, it is.
Super.
It is.
Nice.
Super.
Look how juiced up you look. You're ready. Yes.
So thank you very much for all your recommendations. You can send us more on Twitter at STTE Podcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or email us podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Been a good one, been a fun one, been a hot one.
Very hot.
Graham, are you still alive? Are you there?
I'm moist, but just about surviving.
Nice.
That could be the tagline for the show. Skip to the End, moist, but just about surviving.
Yeah. How do you feel about hosting the Skip Fest in a week's time? You nervous?
Did you say hosting or holding it all together? Well, chaos.
Both.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be an amazing night.
Brilliant.
Sweet.
Here's your tenor.
But before that, we've got another episode. Well, in fact, it'll be after that.
Yeah.
What have we got coming up on the next episode? Gemma?
Oh, my goodness me. Only one of the biggest films of the year. We're going to be reviewing Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, the latest Quentin Tarantino movie.
Ben has filled the cup. I was just saying it. Look at him. Unbelievable. You must be jizzed.
Big time.
Jazzed. Jazzed.
A little from column A, a little from column B.
But that's mad, isn't it?
I cannot fucking wait, dude. Yeah. It looks incredible.
I think somebody's going to be visiting the forest then.
Oh, that's going to be amazing. Who are we masturbating over, Mark?
Richard Linklater.
Well, yes. Hurrah.
Probably one you're not as jizzed about, really.
No, but I'm not quite so jizzed about that. You are right. Something I am very jizzed about, though, is our topic. Top three heist movies.
That's going to be ace.
It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of films that we haven't discussed before, I think. Yeah. Going to be a lot of new content rather than the repetitive shit we do most weeks.
Isn't the Jaws concept there heist is to capture the shark?
Definitely not.
Think about it.
Stop. No.
Okay. Immediately.
Okay.
We're not having that one.
I tried.
What's our rewatch, Gemma?
It's going to be an early Ryan Gosling film called Lars and the Real Girl. It's quite a delightful film. Not a lot of people have heard about it, but seeing as though we're going to be watching one of the biggest films of the year, let's have something nice and gentle for the rewatch.
Yeah, a bit of counter-programming. Yeah.
I've never seen
choice.
It.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one. It's going to be a good one. We'll have all the other usual goodies you're used to, of course. A lot of prizes, a lot of fun, a lot of bullshit. I want to wrap this up now because we're actually going to the venue where we're doing skits.
Yeah.
We're going to go and have a look at it and see if it's suitable.
A bit late now.
Yeah, a bit late.
Can't turn back time. And,
we're going to try at this very late hour to do some prep, like when I used to do my coursework.
Yes.
The always day before it was due.
Always
in.
At the 11th hour.
Big time, big time. We'll see you in 2 weeks.